talked about. So easy.
You gotta put it in perspective.
Welcome to Face with Weird Al Yankovic. I'm the host of the show. By using transitive logic and deductive reasoning, you should now be able to figure out exactly who I am.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G. Ah!
I think it's interesting to note, as Dave has pointed out many times, that the most recent prediction of Nibiru coming close to the Earth was provided by a lady, Nancy, what's her name, Leader, who claims to be channeling aliens around the star system Zeta Reticuli. Well, that should raise a large red flag right there.
Ah, she doesn't care. She's a woman. What this?
And now,
on behalf of the Mother Standards Department, I, Gaylord Felcher, present you with the Employee of the Week Award. Well, let's give it up for this
our feature presentation.
That's a nice award to win. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no kidding.
Quite an honor. Hey, party people, welcome into yet another all-new Kevin and Bean show, this time for a Wednesday. 12-12-12.
Well, yes. Aren't you excited?
I'm not. I'm not a big fan of the crazy dates. I know you think I would be, and I and every time one comes around, I have to explain that for whatever reason, it doesn't do much for me.
But you
love numbers. I know. I think what turned me on the crazy dates and the people who write in when it's, you know, when the date is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, those types of things, is that every time one of them comes around, there's all sorts of misinformation spread about, oh, this is the last time it's going to happen for 800 years and things like that, which is never the case. You know, those types of things usually happen, you know, 7 to 11 years apart.
Oh, and I think I know
it just,
that.
It just drives me crazy to see so many people spread so many wrong things because, you know, I like to be accurate.
Of course you do.
So I think it's kind of ruined it for me. I can't enjoy them anymore. I know. It used to be something that was fun, but no more. Although I did hear from Steve, a listener, a Kevin and Bean listener, podcast listener in New Zealand today, who reminds me that screw 12-12-12, it's National Soundcheck Day. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, which I thought, now that I enjoy.
We have a lot of examples of good sound checking around here.
We certainly do, yes. That I thought was funny. So anyway, I've been flying a fair amount lately, as you may imagine, you know, with Acoustic Christmas and everything like that. And I was at the LAX on Monday, and I know that in the United States we have the policy where if you're going to get the pat down through security, that you get the pat down from the same sex employee.
Right.
Why wouldn't you be like a gay dude and get that job, or be a lesbian and get that job? It just seems like it would be just all day long you'd be doing nothing but feeling up people that you're potentially attracted to.
Well, I guess some people probably do, right?
I saw two unbelievably hot women, one working at the TSA and one going through security. And I think they were on a date. I mean, it was fairly intense.
That is unusual to see that.
I was thinking good. And I mean, I don't know whether she was convinced that this woman had something stuffed in her bra, but she was certainly looking for it. I'll tell you that. There's no, she's all hands.
And I know you, that music's now playing in your head.
Yeah, that was definitely happening. And I think of that because I saw this story in the news last night from Madrid, where they met a plane arriving. A woman was flying to Colombia from Madrid, and she was arrested. Well, they thought she was, you know, potentially concealing drugs. They noticed that she had fresh scars and bloodstained gauze on her chest.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, she explained that she just had breast implant surgery, which seems like a reasonable explanation, and it seems like that must happen all the time, where people really do have breast implant surgery, and they are sore, and they are scars, and there's a little bit of blood. How do you prove that they're not? What is it about that person that makes you think, I know that's your story, and I know that's possible, but I'm not going to believe you? They sent her to the hospital.
Oh, and had her x-rayed?
They said, you're not getting on a plane. We don't believe these are breast implants. We think you're smuggling. And I'm sure she said, that's ridiculous. So they sent her to the hospital. The implants were removed and found to contain cocaine.
No kidding.
She was smuggling cocaine in fake breast implants.
She let people put those in her?
Yes.
That isn't good for you.
And I'm wondering, how do you talk that person into doing that thing, right?
a lot of money, I guess. But, you know, I know why they suspected it, because if you have enough money to get breast implants, you're not immediately jumping on a plane before you're a little bit healed. You wouldn't have, like, bloody bandages and stuff.
You mean, like, because that would be more like day of type thing, right?
2 days later? Yeah.
All right. Then let me ask you that question. If that's going to do nothing but raise suspicions at the airport, why wouldn't you and the people who you're smuggling drugs for, why wouldn't they let it heal up for a few days before they sent you on the plane?
Well, I would imagine you'd have to let it heal up for a week or two. And that would probably mean getting it out is that much harder. Right?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, look.
The whole thing is disgusting.
Could they pay you enough to smuggle drugs under your skin? I get the people who swallow the balloons or whatever, you know, and poop them out on the other end or whatever. But can you imagine going through surgery just so you could smuggle drugs? You better be being paid a lot for that.
Yeah. Not only that, Bean, but how much cocaine could a woman get into each of her breasts that's going to be that lucrative for the person that's having her smuggle it?
She was smuggling 3 pounds of cocaine.
Wow. I don't know what that's worth, but it's probably a lot of money.
3 pounds sounds like a lot to me.
And they probably hadn't cut it up yet.
Thinking about how little Beer Mug uses in every nostril every time he does it.
That's true.
I mean,
yeah.
3 pounds would last you a month, I think, Mugs.
Yeah. Well, maybe 3 weeks. Well, that
so
is
I don't. I don't know what she was paid or what the circumstances are, but apparently the person who was doing the searching at the airport had a hunch, followed through, and apparently it worked out this time. So.
She was probably sweating and, you know, looking really guilty, too.
How could you not, right?
Yeah. Oh, that
is
nuts.
Don't do that, is what I'm saying.
Thank you, Bean. Finally.
Don't be that gal. That's
telling us
saying.
Not to put something in our breasts.
Exactly. All right. Let's talk about today's all-new Kevin and Bean show.
This is certainly getting tedious.
Well, I agree with that, I'm sorry to say. Trapped in the Closet 29. I know we've been teasing it the last couple of days, but I promise Ralph will be here today and we'll take a look at this latest chapter of the R. Kelly Classic. Can't wait. Also, Jeff Probst joins us next hour. He is the host of 2 shows right now. He's got the Jeff Probst talk show during the day, and then he's on Survivor at night, and those 2 shows are going to collide because he has the Final 5 Survivor finalists on his daytime talk show today, and he'll tell us what that's all about. Joe Rogan stopping by today. You know, Joe, Lisa, is one of the folks in the media who got the interview with John McAfee when he was on the run.
Oh, I did not know that.
Joe had been following the story. This is the guy who created the McAfee antivirus software, who is being sought by authorities in his home country. Well, he's American, but he lives now in Belize. They were looking for him because they thought he was involved in his neighbor's death, so he went on the run. And it was just they're going to make a movie out of it, by the way. That's already been signed. But it was just crazy. He was doing all these interviews from around the globe. The police, you know, the international law enforcement community was looking for him. He was doing blog posts and phone calls and everything else.
How did Joe get a hold of him?
Joe tweeted him and said, "Hey, I'm following your story. Please come on the podcast." And he did.
Oh, my God.
So he's got some insight into this dude and what's going on with him. He's now been captured, by the way. I think he's in Guatemala now. But Joe's got that. Plus, the end of the world is right around the corner, and that's right up Joe's alley, too. So we'll talk to him about that. My friend Michael Schneider is going to be joining us. He's with TV Guide. We're going to be talking about the television season just passed, the best and the worst TV shows of 2012, and answer all of our questions about how the TV industry works, because it's super frustrating for those of us as viewers to see the things that happen on television that we get so upset about. When our shows get canceled and things like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You finally get invested in something and then you're like, oh, I don't know. Nobody else is watching. What do I do?
And I want to know how they end up putting so many shows on that every single person knows that's associated with the show that it's terrible. And oftentimes those shows get canceled within, you know, 2-3 episodes.
Yeah.
What a tremendous waste of time and money.
Yeah, that's true.
To put them on the air. Talk about that. Adam Carolla on the program today, and we also have your tickets for Muse. As you know, 2 shows at Staples Center in January. A third just added. Tickets for that one go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. Go to KROQ.com for all the details, or win them this morning on the all-new Kevin and Bean Show. Ralph's got the Showbiz Beat next right after this. By the way, why don't we give away another pair of those KROQ Almost Acoustic Christmas tickets right now? If you want to go to last Sunday night and you want to see that band M83, you can call right now at 1-800. Hi, Ralph. Hi, Ralph Garman.
Wow. I miss Kevin less now.
See?
This is nice.
Hey, I'm filling in. I got to do both parts, man. I got to do the Kevin part and the Beat part.
Doing very well.
Good to see you, Ralph. We missed you yesterday. Good. Your little friend Kevin Smith came by. I know he was sad you weren't here, but we had a nice time anyway.
Yeah, he was shocked and dismayed when he saw I wasn't here, because I didn't give him a heads up that Olivia was sick all night long, and so I had to take her to the doctor. And so a lot of furious texts from him saying, "UK, what's going on?" I mean, he was very shocked that I wasn't here. But he had a good time, and I appreciate you guys carrying on without me.
He was telling me about the gigs you guys have coming up for the weekend, including New Year's Eve. This is going to be your third New Year's Eve of doing the Hollywood Babylon?
Yeah, it's becoming sort of an annual tradition now. We do it every New Year's Eve up at the Lovitz on City Walk, and we sell out every year, and it's a big two-hour show. We have a game show where we give away prizes, and we do the countdown, and our wives are up there on stage, and we have a blast.
I love that, and it solves the whole, what are we going to do on New Year's Eve problem?
Yeah, and people can show up early, you know, and they... Sure. They have a great time, and you're right, Lisa. I know I've got a gig every year, so I don't have to worry about what I'm going to do with the wife anymore. I don't think the wives care about it that much, but they seem to have a good time.
Because Los Angeles and Orange County neither are famous for great New Year's Eve parties that are that are obvious that you want to do.
Right, and people ask all the time, where can I go to do something fun?
Right.
But there's a lot of pressure sometimes at these clubs where it's dancing and stuff and everything. It's, for some people, that's not their thing. They don't want to go out and dance. Whatever. Yeah. So this is a comedy show where they can get loaded, and there's plenty of food and noisemakers and stuff. And
will Glenda be there?
Glenda is coming this year. She's going to be our special guest.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
we finally had a chance to book Glenda. We've been trying to get her for the past couple
of
years.
Busy. So
busy. She is. She's crazy busy.
All right, 5:53, time for a look at the show, Bisbee.
All right, sad news in the world of music. Legendary sitar player Ravi Shankar has passed away. Yeah. He, of course, the legendary sitar player who taught George Harrison of the Beatles all about Indian music, and they became fast friends. A lot of people don't know, however, that he's also the father of Norah Jones.
Yeah, I heard that this morning for the first time. I wasn't sure I'd even heard it right.
Yeah. He passed away at the age of 92 near his home in San Diego. So 92 is a pretty good run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to go, but if you have to go, 92 is a pretty good time to check out.
And you know what's interesting is it's hard to imagine now because we're exposed to music from all over the world.
Yeah.
There's, you know, people are into what they call world music, but back in Ravi Shankar's day, until he came onto the scene, no one in the Western world ever heard any of that music from the Eastern world.
No, Harrison started putting that on Beatles records, and they were like, what is that freaking sound? What is that instrument you're playing?
And not everyone loved it.
It's the sitar. Ravi Shankar told me. And then, of course, he went on to do the famous concert for Bangladesh in 1971 with Harrison, which was a massive fundraising concert for UNICEF. And in this day and age, we get a concert for every disaster. I mean, tonight there's the 12-12-12 show out of Madison Square Garden for the Hurricane Sandy relief. And, you know, of course, Farm Aid and Live Aid and all these concerts. I mean, it's normal operating procedure now to get a benefit concert. But back in the day, this concert was unheard of. It was a massive, multi-star, amazing event that was thrown by George Harrison and Ravi Shankar, and they raised all this money for poverty-stricken Bangladesh, and it was the first fundraising concert ever. So, a lot of history in Ravi's career, and I would say he would be missed, but I thought he was already dead. So, what do I know? Will the 19th time be the charm for Brooke Mueller? That's right, the ex-wife of Charlie Sheen. Is waking up this morning in rehab yet again after 18 unsuccessful attempts at staying clean.
We think 19's a good number.
I do too. I think this time she's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Her attorney says that Brooke was uncomfortable with the way Adderall was making her behave. Yeah. Well, it's because people who take Adderall for recreational purposes say it mimics the effects of cocaine. So it's a way to get that high. Legally, I guess, if you can get someone to prescribe it for you.
Right.
But now she's got to kick that. She was in the hospital last week for dehydration and, of course, exhaustion. So now she's in rehab. And anyone take bets? Anyone?
I'm not uber confident that this is going to cure her for life.
Yeah, that's probably a good bet. The AskMen.com list of 99 hot women of the year has been released. AskMen.com, the men's website every year.
Oh, I thought you said AskMen.com. No. I thought it was a completely different list we were going to hear.
AskMen.com.
Okay, that's not as good, but I'll still listen.
Is the men's website that every year lists their top 99 women. The top of the list isn't so much story as what's happening to people who were near the top of the list last year. For example, Modern Family Sofia Vergara, who was number one last year, dropped to 12th place this year.
She looks just as good
as
she did.
That's what I'm thinking. How could you drop 12 places?
Happened?
Feel bad for Scarlett Johansson, who is seventh, who's now 45 on the list.
45? What? Come on.
And Kim Kardashian, who is eighth. I'm sorry. Porn star Kim Kardashian, who was eighth on the list last year, This year, number 98.
Well, that's not a very scientific process that they have to determine that, then.
She's got 98 problems. And the bitch is one. Yeah, I wonder if... I don't know why that would happen. But here's your top seven. Hottest women. And already, out of the gate, I got a problem. Number seven, Kristen Stewart.
Oh, come on.
Listen, I'm no Kim Kardashian fan, but if you put those two against each other and say, pick the hot one, it's not exactly a math test.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty simple.
Are men voting for...
It's supposed to be, yeah.
Can't be. Men don't even see her movies.
Miranda Kerr was sixth. That makes sense.
Okay.
Emma Stone was fifth. Rihanna, fourth. Now, again, Rihanna, I think, is a lovely and attractive woman. It can be sexy at times.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to Scarlett Johansson or Sofia Vergara. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Third on the list. This will make Kevin happy in absentia. Kate Upton, third on the list.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Mila Kunis.
Oh, nice.
My TED co-star, second on the list. Number one, surprising to me. Perhaps this is what happens when you have a hot movie. 2012. Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh.
Top of the list of the hot women of the year from AskMen.com.
And I think you have tapped into why those other ladies moved so far down is because it seems like heat is kind of part, not just attractiveness, but where they are culturally is kind of part of what went into the deciding factor here.
Yeah. Out of
you know, like Kim Kardashian, so many of us are really like so over her now.
Yeah.
That we're not that excited about her being in the top 10 anymore.
We've heard her talk a lot. I think that's the problem. We've heard Kim Kardashian talk a lot. And that really just... takes the
a
shine,
sucker.
Takes the shine off that jewel. And someone who wasn't on the list, as far as I know, I can't find her here. Lindsay Lohan in the news today. She, of course, has her big court date where she has to face the judge about that potential revoking of her probation because she did lie to police when she was in that accident with that tractor trailer in June. You'd think most of us facing potential jail time for violating probation would make a point of showing up at our scheduled court appearance to appear in front of the judge in person. Perhaps garner some sympathy or to make an impassioned plea on our own behalf.
Uh-huh.
Lindsay is sending her attorney, Sean Holly, to see the judge today.
Well, she's busy.
She is busy, Lisa, because she has to leave for London with Max George and The Wanted to go see their show there in London. She's traveling with Max and then on to Dubai. So,
really,
she's doing very important things, more important than possibly getting 245 days in prison for violating her probation, not including any time she would incur for lying to police officers about that same said incident. So,
hey, and let me tell you what else she's not doing, Ralph, while she's on the tour bus whoring around with The Wanted.
Yeah.
She's not making any dent in raising money to pay her $8,000 a month that she's behind on her rent.
Yeah.
Or, she's not out there hustling to make a living so she doesn't get evicted.
Or her IRS tax bill, by the way.
Right. Doing nothing to that. Right.
And you know what we found out yesterday? She never thanked or acknowledged Charlie Sheen's gift of $100,000.
No.
Yeah. Not a word.
No.
That's
took
shocking.
The money and run.
She's a prize.
She is the best. she's.
We should all have a friend like Lindsay Lohan.
Today's celebrity birthdays, game show host and dog mutilator Bob Barker. 89 years old today.
I think he just gets some.
No, I heard he like cuts their balls off
well,
and stuff.
Well, yes, but
he cuts dogs' balls off.
He encourages neutering and spaying. He's just trying to keep down the pet population in a humane way, Ralph.
Twisted guy. That guy is going around hurting dogs.
Who are these people protesting Michael Vick?
That's
and they give
right.
Barker a pass.
Yeah, exactly. He's got jars of dog balls at home.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't anybody care? He's 89 years old today. Singer, percussionist Sheila E. excuse me, is 55 years old. Yes, Bean?
What the hell was that?
I could hear it coming. I just wanted to leave a space.
What do you suppose it's like for her these days, Ralph? Sheila E.
I don't know. What's it like?
You think she's living the glamorous life?
No, you can't applaud your own thing.
I thought it, and then I wasn't going to say it, and then I laughed because it was still funny to me, and then you forced me to say it, so it's not on me.
Funny to you.
Good question. Why would that be funny to you? Jennifer Connelly, the lovely and talented, is 42 years old today. Country singer Hank Williams, 3.
Oh.
Is that Hank Williams Jr.'s kid?
Yep, sure is.
He's 40 years old. I didn't even know he was a country singer. I got excited here because I thought this was Hank Williams Jr., but it's not. It's his kid. He's 40. Mayim Bialik from The Big Bang Theory. Of course, she was Blossom on TV. Belle for Mayim Bialik.
Don't you think she's pretty?
No.
No. Really? I think she's pretty.
No. She's not Belle pretty.
No. Okay. She's barely gong pretty.
All right.
She's 37. And guitarist Dan Hawkins of The Darkness is 36. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Grateful Dead on K-Rock, 106.7 KRQ. That's a Grateful Dead, right?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Sounds just like him. Our friend Joe Rogan joins us next hour. Adam Carolla on the program today. And Jeff Probst, host of Survivor.
Oh!
We'll get to that first, though. What's your little pal R. Kelly up to these days, Ralph?
Nothing but genius. Nothing but magic. It is chapter 29 of Trapped in the Closet, of all the brand new chapters that R. Kelly released. And he really did us a gift this time around because, you know, he used to release them one at a time. We had to wait for the next chapter.
Right.
But this year on Black Friday, no pun intended, it was the Friday after Thanksgiving when he released a whole bunch of new chapters of Trapped in the Closet. And we are going through them one by one. Today we take a look at chapter 29. Here we are reintroduced to the character Reverend Mosley, who is a preacher, of course, played by R. Kelly in the video. And he is a televangelist who, well, he wants to save you.
Hallelujah. Thank you, Jesus. An old buddy of mine, Al Green, said it best. Can I get an amen up in here? Now, some of y'all don't know I used to sing background for that man. To God came in and swooped me up off my feet. And he could do the same for you.
Is the character really moved forward in its narrative by talking about the fact he used to sing background for Al Green? Do we need that detail?
But I think I would go to this church. I love this character.
You know, as I was watching this, I said, wow. He leaves no stereotype unturned, really, when it comes to the African-American community. He's got thug gangsters. He's got pimps. He's got holy roller, revivalist preachers. He's just really, the NAACP should look into this. Or somebody should do an investigation. Well, how exactly is Reverend Mosley going to save us? What does he have to offer that will change our lives?
Well, I got some here that'll change your very life. Thank you, God. The Reverend J. Mosley Ministry presents my book.
Yeah.
And it's an excellent read.
It's an excellent read. It's a book that he wants to sell you. I wonder what the title of the book would be.
Trapped in the Closet. The book.
Yeah, Trapped in the Closet, the book.
Nah, I don't mean to brag, but it's the Bible. And it's this, hallelujah.
Yeah. It's the Bible, and it's Trapped in the Closet, the book. Those are the only two books you really need, according to
the
Reverend. How do we get this book, Reverend? How can we get our hands on it? Well, R. Kelly tells us.
Reverend Mosley starts to preach on about the book and what it takes to get one. Just sit there, $29.95, and that's a discount.
You're getting a deal. You're getting a deal on the book.
Because you're in the congregation.
Throughout the video, we realize that what we're watching is Reverend Mosley's television program, actually. And it pulls back from the television. We realize that the two people watching it are Tina and Roxanne. Now, you may remember Tina and Roxanne, the lesbian lovers from the previous chapters of Trapped in the Closet. Tina was the mother of Twan's baby. And then Twan found out that Tina was in a lesbian relationship with Roxanne. And that made him very upset. Well, here they are watching the Reverend on television, and I get the sense that there's trouble in paradise between these two lesbian girlfriends.
Tina and Roxanne at the restaurant. Roxanne says, Jack Leg preacher, he's so full of then Tina says, don't say that, girl, he's a preacher. Roxanne says, I know a preacher when I see one, and he ain't no preacher. Tina, there's so much I've got to teach you.
Yeah, see? He didn't preach you. There's so much I got to teach you.
Sure, yeah.
Oh, that's genius. Well, the problem is every time they fight, and we saw this in the previous chapters, Tina starts developing a tic. When she gets upset, her face starts to twitch.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. She has a tic where her eye starts to flutter. And the actress in this video, by the way, does this no justice when she starts twitching her face. But that means that these two are about to get into it, and indeed they do. This is the entirety of the lesbian girl fight between Tina and Roxanne.
Then Tina's eyes start blinking again like it did before. She throws the broom on the floor and says, I can't take this shit no more. Now Tina, listen to me. Will you listen to me? I'm tired of you telling me what to do.
Girl, don't forget who you're talking to.
Like you're running me. Bitch, that pimp slap must have made you crazy. Roxanne, you are the reason I ain't got a father for my baby. Now, I ain't gonna listen to too much more of this. Now, bitch, you way out of line. No, bitch. You way out of time.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
You way out of line? Well, you're way out of time.
Drama.
Now, what? Just what is that supposed to mean?
And just what is that supposed to mean?
Good question.
I'm going to find Tuan. I'm so over this scene.
Tina's leaving Roxanne to find Tuan to reunite their happy, happy family with the drug-dealing gangster and the lesbian mother of her, of his child.
Excellent.
Too much.
Now,
too much.
In this video, we realize that these mysterious calls that everyone's been getting, mm-hmm. it is revealed in this chapter that those calls are, in fact, from a reality TV show producer who is putting together a documentary about all of the lives and all of the things that are going on with all these characters. So throughout the videos, we see sprinkled these short sit-down interviews with the characters in character to music about their feelings. And I haven't been playing because really they're just sort of recaps of what happens. But this one with Roxanne, I just thought was pretty spectacular.
I don't know who the hell she thinks she is if she thinks she could talk to me this way. She got another thing coming. Let me tell you something. She gon' f*** around, make me catch a case. Took her black ass in, gave her a job, and oh, she wanna forget about the past. Twan, she crazy. She thinks she leaving me for his gorilla body having ass. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. She's crazy if she thinks she's leaving me for Twan's gorilla body having ass. So I get the sense that Roxanne is going to do whatever it takes to keep her woman, and I just can't wait for the next chapter. Chapter 30, tomorrow.
Awesome.
Trapped
can't
in
wait.
The closet.
Linkin Park on K-Rock 106.7 KROQ with the Acoustic Christmas shows this past weekend behind us now. We look ahead toward what's coming up next, and that might include Muse in your future. On today's Kevin and Bean Show, we're going to give you some tickets to see Muse at Staples Center. They are, of course, sold out on January the 23rd and 24th. A third show has just been added for January the 26th. Tickets are going on sale Friday morning at 10 a.m. Go to KROQ.com for details, and we've got your Muse tickets that you can win this morning on the Kevin and Bean Show. We're going to have Jeff Probst on the phone here for a second. His two jobs on TV, Ralph, are going to collide today because, you know, he's got the daytime talk show weekdays at 2 on NBC.
Yeah.
And then he's the host of Survivor, which is, you know, which is tonight on CBS. So today on his talk show, he's going to have the five remaining Survivor contestants that are still in the running to win the $1 million on the nighttime show.
Yeah, it's not too shabby when you are the executive producer of one of the biggest shows on television. And then you get to throw your weight around and take everybody from that show and put them on your other show.
Yeah,
smart
this will be pretty
move
exciting
by Mr.
Now,
Probst.
We're going to talk to Jeff in one second here, but correct me if I'm wrong. Generally, you don't see interviews with people while the show is still on. Like, this is kind of rare to get a chance to talk to them as they head into that final week, right?
As far as I know, this is the first time access has ever been granted to the finalists for the show.
Because I think you're right.
They are normally so super secretive about who it's going to make it to the end that I don't think they give the contestants an opportunity to screw them out of the big reveal by having people talk to the press. So I think in the 12-year history of Survivor, this is the first time that they're going to have the finalists talk outside of the finale of the show, which comes up in a couple of weeks.
Usually the CIA comes and they put you in one of those homeland safe houses.
That's right. They throw a black bag over your head and they zip tie your hands behind your back and they just throw you in a box for a while until it's all over.
There it is.
Hello?
All right.
Still there?
I'm still here. I was watching the phones waiting to get Mr. Probst on the line so we can find out. Because he's the guy, frankly, who knows. Give me a little bit of your theme song here, Ralph, as we bring Jeff on. All right. That's fine. That's fine. We got it. Hi, Jeff. Welcome back to the show,
that's
my friend.
That's the worst version of the Survivor theme song that I've
How
ever heard.
Dare you, sir.
That's what we're famous for, is the worst versions of everything you've ever heard on the Kevin and Bean Show.
You know what's funny is I get up this morning to call you guys. Uh-huh. And I literally come downstairs so I don't wake anybody up. And I'm sitting here.
Right.
I was here 20 minutes ago, and then at 6:41, I get a text going, dude, what the F? Why aren't you calling these guys? Hourly I get up. I
know. Everybody's always complaining. Well, we set up, before we got you on the phone, we set up what was going on, that today on your Jeff Probst show at 2, you're going to have the five finalists from Survivor. And we were questioning, this is extremely rare, right, to get a chance to talk to these people as they head into the final stretch.
Yeah, CBS is always, since I think because Survivor was the first and it was such a, at the time, a really big deal to know who won or who was left, they didn't want anybody ever talking while the show was on because they didn't want anybody to spoil the mystique that maybe we were still out on the island, and they didn't want anybody to blow anything.
But right.
This year, I don't know exactly why they said yes, but we have the final five on today, and it's fun because you're in the middle of the game. What's funny, I got to interrupt to say that the publicist from the show is now calling me, go panic that I'm not on with you guys.
Well, everything's fine.
Well, Jeff, if I may suggest, the reason they've changed their behavior this time around is because it's your damn show, Jeff.
Well, yeah, maybe that might. It doesn't seem like that would be the reason, though. Survivor's way more important than the Jeff Probst show.
But they know you will treat it properly and you'll handle it and you won't let them screw anything up.
You know what? You might be right.
Yeah.
And they know we can always edit. Yeah.
We have talked to you dozens of times over the years, and this is the 25th cycle for Survivor, and you've always given the credit to whoever the casting people are that pick the contestants because they know what they're doing. They know how to pick great people. But for whatever reason, here we are in season 25. This final five has just electrified America. I mean, everybody is talking about this one all of a sudden, which is just crazy as long as this show's been on the air.
It is. I know, and you're right. I mean, I have to say, this has been a season for the first time in a long time where everybody has loved, especially right now, the people that are left. Anybody could win. Everybody's loving them. And there's this woman and her team, Lynn Spillman and her team. This is what they do. And we just started casting for next year, a year from now. And we have good people coming in again. But it's the format, too. It is a great idea to take a group of strangers and dump them and say, here's the deal. You have to work together to survive. And then you have to get rid of people, and whoever's left at the end wins.
Yeah, I agree, Jeff. It's a great premise, but I always felt the show, and I'm a big fan, I've always felt the show rises and falls upon the strengths of the heroes and the villains in any given season.
Yep.
And I got to tell you something, Abby is the biggest bitch you've ever had on Survivor.
Let me ask you.
I literally throw things at my television screen, Jeff, when she's on my screen.
Here's my question, and if somebody doesn't watch Survivor but they love your show, so they're listening through this interview with a guy they could care less about, the premise of Abby is she's Brazilian, and the question still on my mind is her bitchiness simply an entitled young person who wants everything, or is any of it, do you think, cultural?
No. I agree with Denise when she says it's not cultural, she's just a bitch.
Yeah.
Because there's other people from Brazil, Jeff, who are very nice people.
You're right.
Abby is just a bitch.
And here's what's crazy about
Abby. And a little
Abby.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Here's what's crazy about Abby. Well, before the show started, we were in casting, I actually, my notes on her were, if she gets on the show, she's really charming and she could win $1 million.
No way. No way.
Yeah, that's how she came across.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Ralph, you're going to burn this mother down if she wins, though, right?
Oh, yeah. They'll be rioting in the streets if Abby walks away with $1 million. It will not stand.
It's also been funny to see Lisa from The Facts of Life, who's like a star all over again as a result of this program, too.
I love her.
I think everybody does. She's so sweet.
And you know what's great about Lisa is that she is letting us in on a very vulnerable time in her life. She had just gotten divorced when we went out to start shooting. So she'd had no time to really process this life change. She's a Christian mom who's stuck in the middle of this devilish game that she loves and desperately wants to play, but she's afraid of having Christians be seen in the wrong light, and it's this real moral dilemma for her.
I don't think any contestant's ever been more open about the inner battle that goes on between trying to be nice to these people that you have grown to care about and also trying to play the game well.
Yeah, I don't either. And that you root for.
Yeah.
Really root for her to. And when we had the loved one visit and her brother came and visited her, it was a big turning point for her because he basically said, I love you, I know who you are, and get out there and kick some.
Yeah, lie, cheat, do whatever you need to do. Right? You can work it out with Jesus afterwards.
I'll also say one more thing, and again, this is the voice of our friend Jeff Probst on the phone today. You should watch the five final Survivor contestants on Jeff's daytime show at NBC this afternoon at 2. I'll also say this, and this is fascinating to me. As long as Survivor's been on, and at this point, every single contestant who's on your show year after year, Jeff, watches Survivor. That's why they want to be on the show. They all think they know how to play. They all think it's going to be easier than it is. Everybody is crushed by going through what you put them through. There's nobody who ever gets to the end and goes, yeah, that was pretty easy. It's always harder than they think it's going to be, even though they watch the show.
Yeah, I think it's impossible to approximate. And even for me, and I've watched every one of them do it for every day, and I still can't quite understand what it feels like to go that long in such a strange environment when you're sleeping on bamboo, you are cold most of the time, and you're starving, and this mental game. Because if you're really playing, if you truly are the person who's aware enough to play Survivor for a shot to win, then you don't sleep, really, for 39 days. You may close your eyes, but your brain is still aware there are still five people, where'd somebody go, who'd they go with, what are they saying, what are they doing? Because you can't ever let up.
Yep, that's right. You're absolutely right.
And there is no way to see what's coming on this game. I don't care who you are, as well as you play it, everybody gets surprised at some point. They cannot believe what's happening to them.
And what I think I would most enjoy about Survivor now is I would enjoy the honesty. I would enjoy getting to play this game and then go back and hear what people were really saying about me. Like with Abby. Yeah. I think Abby's gotten a real kick in the gut. I don't think anybody's ever told her how much they don't like her. And it's basically everyone who plays says she's not likable. And to hear that, yeah, it's fun to watch. But I do sometimes put myself in that person's shoes and think, man, you are stuck on a damn island that you cannot get off of. And everyone, they literally despise you as a person.
I don't have to put myself in her shoes. I live it, man. I know exactly how Abby feels on the island when everyone hates you.
My wife keeps saying, I can't wait to see the tape package they put together for Abby in the reunion show when everyone's talking about how much they hate her. It's going to be great.
Yeah, that is true. That is, we just put that together. It's going to be a fun reunion show because we have good talkers, likable people, and tonight we have an episode and we get down to four, and then Sunday we have our final episode, and it
beautiful
finishes really well. I'm very happy, and I got to tell you, as a teaser, next season, which starts in February, I think maybe 13th, is awesome, and I will come back, and if it's not right, you can have me do any dare you want. That's good.
All right. Great. It's a deal, Jeff. Thanks for the time today, man. Go back to sleep. Have a happy holiday season. We'll talk to you again, my friend.
Thanks, you guys.
Joe Rogan for the hour coming up just after 7 here on the Kevin and Bean Show on KROQ. Now, Ralph joins us for the Showbiz Beat. Good morning, Ralph.
Hello, boys and girls. About an hour ago, the Screen Actors Guild released their list of nominees for their annual SAG Awards. This, for me, is my favorite award show of the year because it is actors giving actors awards for acting, for actors who act when they're acting with actors. And when you watch the show on television, it's what we all wish the Emmys and the Oscars would be, with just a bunch of famous people getting up there and talking, which is really the reason we watch these shows, right? So here's the list of who the actors thought gave the best performances this year. And this is often a precursor for the Oscars and the Emmys, so you may want to take a listen. Outstanding performance by a male actor in a leading role. Your nominees are Bradley Cooper for Silver Linings Playbook. This thing's getting a lot of critical acclaim. I've yet to see this film, and I need to see it because it's about Eagles fans. For God's sakes. Daniel Day-Lewis, Lincoln. John Hawkes for The Sessions. That's that movie about that dude in the Iron Lung I told you about who was
the sex surrogate.
Yeah, they get to get laid. People talking about that. Hugh Jackman.
So what an Iron Lung, by the way. That guy's getting so much more tail than I am.
Yeah. It'd be perfect for you because then you really literally wouldn't have to move anywhere. They would just wheel you around, Bean. That's the life of you.
If they could just hook it up so that my eyes could control the internet and the TV, I'd be set. I'd have no complaints.
Hugh Jackman for Les Miserables. Denzel Washington for Flight. Outstanding performance by a female actor in a leading role. Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty, the Obama hit movie. Obama. Yeah. Marion Cotillard for Rust and Bone. Yeah. Her first porn movie, right? Rust and
Bone? I don't
think
it's what you think it is.
Oh. Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook. Helen Mirren for Hitchcock. And Naomi Watts for The Impossible. She plays one of those cartoon superheroes, that family of superheroes who run around.
Nope.
And,
nope.
Crazy.
This is the tsunami movie. She's a woman who survives the tsunami.
No.
In Indonesia.
Outstanding performance, male actor in a supporting role, Alan Arkin for Argo. He was pretty hilarious in that film. Javier Bardem for his chilling, alternately hilarious turn as the villain in Skyfall. Mr. Silva, loved him in that. Robert De Niro for Silver Linings Playbook. Philip Seymour Hoffman for The Master, that thinly veiled story of Scientology. And Tommy Lee Jones. Everyone talk about his performance in Lincoln. While we're talking about Lincoln, outstanding performance by a female actor in a supporting role, Sally Field for her role as Mary Todd Lincoln. Anne Hathaway for Les Miserables. Helen Hunt for The Sessions. She's the sex therapist in that film. Nicole Kidman for The Paperboy. Isn't that one where she pees on somebody?
I believe so. Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Really? Really? She does that. Yeah. He gets stung by a jellyfish, I think, and she's got to pee on
it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Maggie Smith, the best exotic marigold hotel and best performance from a cast in a motion picture. Argo, best exotic marigold hotel, Les Miserables, Lincoln, and Silver Linings Playbook. So those are some of your... SAG
hard to argue with anything you've just said, Ralph.
Yeah, I know. I'm out of time, but I want to do the TV nominations. Maybe we'll do that in the next hour. We'll tell you who's been nominated for best performances as an actor on television. In the meanwhile, here's our celebrity birthdays. Game show host Bob Barker is 89 years old today. Singer-percussionist Sheila E. She got a break from Prince, right? Isn't he one who discovered her?
Yep, yeah. That's right.
55 years old. Jennifer Connelly turns 42 years old. Mayim Bialik from The Big Bang Theory and Blossom turns 37. Regina Hall, actress from Ally McBeal and Law & Order L.A., she is 42. And Dan Hawkins, guitarist for The Darkness, is 36. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
I don't want to start off in a contentious way, Joe Rogan, but I think the Black Keys going on stage with the Rolling Stones Saturday night is going to be awesome. What's wrong with that? How can you not appreciate that?
Talking to me, man.
He is talking to you.
With the Rolling Stones? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Why not?
That's awesome. I thought you said something about with Rolling Stone, like Rolling Stone magazine.
No. They're going on stage, and you said that lessens them in your eyes. Why?
I thought you were saying Rolling Stone magazine lessons.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, it's with the band, the Rolling Stones, who they're just paying tribute to, because I'm sure they grew up, like many young people who get into music, loving the Rolling Stones. So I think it's awesome they get to be on stage with their heroes. I'm looking forward to that.
Isn't it kind of crazy that like some bands like Rolling Stones, like at a certain point in time, it's just understood that they don't make any new songs anymore?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, they have two new songs out right now.
Save it.
But no one seems to care. People just want to hear Satisfaction again, which has got to be frustrating
for
them.
It's too bad, because they're good, at least.
New songs are good?
Yeah.
New songs are
how
real good.
They're
how
actually
good.
Really
are
good.
They,
really
is
good.
Are old songs?
All right, hang on a second. Let me see if I have it. I might have it in my iTunes here. Well, give me a minute to find it. But
something happens to bands when they get older. They just don't produce new
stuff.
They get
older. That's what happens.
Yeah, like Kiss. Remember when Kiss, like, they kept trying to put out new songs, and they got to a certain point and said, all right, let's cut the crap.
Nobody cares.
Put the makeup back on.
All right, let's see what you think, Joe. This is one of the new Rolling Stones songs that's out on their 50th anniversary album. It's called Doom and Gloom. And I'm telling you, if this was a new band, I think people would dig it.
I had a dream last night. I was piloting a plane. All the passengers were drunk and
pretty badass.
Yep.
Sitting in the dirt, feeling kind of hurt. But all I hear is doom and gloom.
I mean, it sounds like a lot of other Rolling Stones songs, but that doesn't sound to me like a band that's just cashing in and just, you know. I mean, that sounds like that's somebody, they worked on that, and it's good.
That sounds like Mick Jagger's still trying to get laid.
He's 69 years old. He's out doing what he's doing, by the way.
And 69. What is he doing? Can we follow him with a camera?
I would love to see.
I would just like to see his daily Viagra consumption.
It would be fascinating. Yeah.
Well, the Stones are going to be on that 12-12-12 concert tonight from New York. And then again, the pay-per-view is Saturday night. Lady Gaga is another guest for them on Saturday night. And the Black Keys. And Bruce Springsteen's going to be on stage with the Stones Saturday, too. So that could be pretty cool.
Isn't it kind of cute that we like those numbers? Like 12-12-12. It's crazy. Let's get married. Let's get married on 12-12-12. Oh, my God.
Lots of people will be doing it. Now, listen, Joe Rogan is here on the Kevin and Bean Show. He has a bunch of stuff going on, including the Joe Rogan and Friends Celebrate the End of the World. Is this sold out yet, Joe? Or can people still buy tickets for the World Tour?
Not much left. It's not much,
okay, a little bit.
Next
all right.
Friday night, I think. What is the 21st?
It's Friday the 21st. That's yeah. right. It's going to be at the Wiltern with your favorite band, Honey Honey. Also, your friend Doug Stanhope is going to be there. Joey Diaz is also on the bill. Tickets are available through LiveNation.com. That's the End of the World show, which I'm sure you've been talking a lot about, the crazy people who really do. And it does seem like there are still a few, but not as many as I thought now that we're finally in December 12th.
Well, I think people are slowly starting to realize that no one has ever predicted anything correctly ever. You know, I mean, the Mayans might have gotten a few calendars correctly. And like, you know, as far as like lunar eclipses and solar eclipses, they predicted that stuff. But no one's ever predicted the demise of anything ever.
Right. Yeah.
Especially on the exact day. But by the way, the Mayans don't even really predict the end of civilization in their calendar. It's just the end of the long count. They mm-hmm. just have a long cycle of, you know, X amount of thousands of years.
I'm hoping that people are getting smarter, because 10 years ago, if you would have asked me, I would have predicted that in December of 2012, after years and years and years of hearing about that as being the end of the world, I would have thought that there would be thousands of people showing up on the top of a mountain, sitting and praying and waiting for it. You know what I mean? But it seems like people have kind of wised up, because of time after time after time, other people have been wrong with that prediction. I think most people have pretty much let that go by now.
It's doomsday exhaustion.
Well, the reality is we all have our life date. We all are finite. And if the world is finite as well, it shouldn't really be that much of a shock. And the more we study the Earth and the more we study the history of this continent, we know about all the extinction events that have happened here. Yellowstone is a perfect example. Every 600,000 to 800,000 years, Yellowstone blows sky high and kills everything on the continent. And the last time it happened was 600,000 years ago.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know
really?
That.
Yellowstone,
I didn't know that
Yellowstone is what's called a caldera volcano, and they just figured this out in the last couple decades when they started using satellite imagery, and they found out that Yellowstone, I think it's something like 300 kilometers across, and it's a caldera volcano is a volcano that's so violent in its eruption that there's no trace of the volcano after it's over. The whole mountain blows up into the sky and leaves this big crater and just fills the entire continent with volcanic ash that comes down like heavy snow, blocks out the sky, kills all the plants, kills all the animals. It happens every 600,000 to 800,000 years.
Is that, with all the doomsday theories you've talked about on your podcast over the years, the crazy fans that you have around the world, is that the most likely end-of-the-world scenario, do you think?
Asteroidal impact is a good one, because it's a continent killer, but it's not a world killer. Supervolcanoes don't kill everything in the world. Australia would still be fine, so we'd be populated by Australians, and hopefully they got enough of our culture that they would be able to carry on. hopefully they received enough of our internet transmission that we'd be able to do something worthwhile in the future. But as far as like most likely scenarios for the end of the world, it's man-made is most likely.
You know, really? Like how? You mean like bombs?
Yes. If you look at North Korea, those knuckleheads just shot up a satellite into orbit, and they're not doing that so they can get better cable. You know, they're not doing it so they can get HBO. They're doing that so they can, you know, eventually figure out a way to launch a missile and have it actually threaten other nations besides South Korea.
There are people who are crazy enough to blow up a bomb that would not only kill their enemy, but would kill us all, right? There are people who would make that decision, you think?
If people are willing to drive a plane or fly a plane into a building and kill themselves and everybody on board, I would say yes. It's just a matter of, do the right people get access to that stuff, and how do they do that? You know, if that is the case, yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, there's a guy in Portland yesterday that went into a mall and shot up a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. There's always going to – and then kill themselves. There's always going to be people that are out of their mind. The question is, do those people have access to something that's really life-changing like that?
We saw a study last year, Lisa. Remember, we talked about it on the show. We may have even done it as a phone-in topic. It was a surprisingly high percentage of people who believed that the world was going to end in their lifetime.
Yeah.
And that was a surprise to me, and I wondered how much of that was just megalomaniacs thinking that the world's not worth going on if I'm not here anymore, so it has to end while I'm here because this is the pinnacle.
Well, there's a lot of people that believe in, you know, that the world is going to end because of the fact that they're born into this situation, this life that they have no control over, and then they realize slowly somewhere along the line as they go they grow older, that no one has any idea what the hell's going on, and we're all born into this situation that is sort of moving on momentum. You know, our society and our culture is moving on a momentum that was started long before we ever existed. You know, so we're sort of – we wake up in the middle of all this. And as we assume our positions in life, we realize this machine is already in motion. And this easily could go completely horribly wrong and fall apart right in front of our eyes. And there's a lot of theories about life that get really weird when it comes to the end of the world. And one of them is that the world itself – does not exist, and that as your life becomes closer and closer, comes closer and closer to the end, that's when the end of the world actually happens. That the end of the world really just coincides with the end of your own life because you live in your own universe. It actually is taking place inside of your own mind.
Well,
was
that's
this
just
a stream
dumb.
Theory that you, I mean,
you
right?
say that's just dumb, but here's the issue. Super string theorists, those guys that write that Goodwill Hunting type stuff on the mm-hmm. blackboard yeah, yeah, that nobody yeah. understands, they have found in the code of super string theory, they have found in the equations something called – it's a self-correcting computer code that was actually discovered and created in the 1940s. Not just a computer code, not just like – there's computer codes in nature, like there's what's called the Fibonacci sequence. And the Fibonacci sequence expresses itself in sunflower seeds, in pine cones, and all. It's a mathematical sequence that occurs all throughout nature. The shape of your face is directly proportional. The size of your nose is directly proportional to the size, the width of your cheeks. And so why when someone gets a nose job, they start looking weird. Mm-hmm. One of the things that makes them look weird is that we understand proportions of faces and how you're supposed to be. Well, the Fibonacci sequence is just one different sequence. And what the Fibonacci sequence is it's an exponential sequence. It's like 1 plus 1 is 2, 2 plus 1 is 3, 3 plus 2 is 5, 5 plus 3 is 8, and that's what it is, and it goes on and on and on and on. And that expresses itself in pine cones, like how a pine cone like sort of branches out in a very uniform way. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing they found that this is the self-correcting computer code is way more complicated because it's actually constantly changing and morphing and correcting itself. I'm too stupid to truly understand what it means, but at the lowest measurable point of reality, they found evidence that reality is fake. And that's what it means when they found this code inside the equations of super string theory. So the simulation theory, the real theory of the possibility is that what we're living in is not reality, and that there is no reality anymore, and that if we keep going the way we're going, we know that technology will one day get to a point where we'll be able to create a artificial reality that's indiscernible from regular reality. We'll be able to interface with our own neurofrequencies and connections and emotions to the point where we'll create something that you could actually knock on things and you feel it in your hand, you have sex, you feel it in your body, have emotions, you feel them in your mind, and that it will be completely indiscernible from the regular reality. Well, the question is, how do we know when that's happened?
And it may have already happened. We may be living in the fake reality right now.
So as you're worried about the end of the world and all the doom and gloom, it may be your own demise that is creeping up on you, and the simulation's about to end, and then you'll wake up as a baby in Indonesia.
Have a great day, everybody.
Naked in the woods, running from tigers.
Joe Rogan is here on stage with his friends celebrating the end of the world next Friday the 21st. Tickets available through LiveNation.com. We got so much to talk about. We got to talk about the podcast. Got to talk about your special. Got to talk about your friend John McAfee.
Oh, hell yeah.
Talk about so much right after this with Joe Rogan on the world famous K-Rock. Joe Rogan in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show on 106.7 KROQ. He and his friends celebrate the end of the world next Friday at the Wiltern, a week from this Friday at the Wiltern. Tickets available through LiveNation.com. Great lineup with Doug Stanhope, Joey Diaz, and music from Honey Honey. That's going to be a lot of fun. Joe, you got a little international press a couple of weeks ago when you reached out on Twitter to John McAfee, who is on the run, and you said, hey, I'm following your story, come on my podcast, and lo and behold, he did. Tell folks who McAfee is who maybe haven't been paying attention to the news.
McAfee is a software genius who created McAfee Virus, McAfee antivirus software. That's that the stuff that comes with a 10-day trial or whatever the hell it is. You know.
And he made hundreds of millions of dollars off of that, right? It was to set him up forever.
Yeah, and he also popularized some viruses that never came to fruition, so there's a lot of speculation, and he was kind of a hoser, a little bit, pretending that big viruses were coming.
Protection.
And he got in trouble. there was something in I think it was New Mexico. He was doing this thing where they were involved with planes. There were this sort of a creation. It was like a motorcycle type situation where it's like a motorcycle body but on with kite wings. And so there was these really lightweight aircrafts, and they were doing all these acrobatics with them, and he was trying to set it up as a new sport. And someone died, and so he fled the country. He took all his money and went to Belize. He's like you know,
he's not really allowed back?
No, he's allowed back, but you know, there's a lot of people that want to sue him, and especially these people. He said he's got a bunch of lawsuits going on. But anyway, he's involved in a murder investigation in Belize. He's been living in Belize. He's 67 years old with a 17-year-old girlfriend. I think now she's 20, or maybe the new one's 20. But anyway, he was making all these online posts about cooking up something called MDPV. And MDPV is like one of those new sort of designer bath salts type drugs that apparently makes you hypersexual. And his descriptions, there's a website called Blue Light, and Blue Light is like all drug talk. And he wrote these really in-depth descriptions of this extraction process where he built a laboratory behind his house in Belize, like a high-tech laboratory where he was taking these drugs
and
spinning them around in centrifuges and extracting certain elements from them and purifying them. And it's a very lengthy process. And he posted this with photos on this website. And then his neighbor wound up dead. So apparently someone was poisoning his dogs, and this neighbor who had complained about his dogs was the number one suspect. The neighbor winds up dead. No one knows what happens. John McAfee goes on the lam, no doubt fueled by massive amounts of paranoia due to these substances that he's taking.
No one would believe this story if they wrote it as a movie, by the way. It has too many crazy moving parts, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, there's a lot going on there. The 67-year-old guy hopped up on crazy drugs, banging a 20-year-old.
He had like lots of women in and out day and night all kinds of things happening.
In now, Belize.
Yeah. And it's a quiet area where he lives.
He claims he is innocent. He claims he had nothing to do with his neighbor's death, although the police want to talk to him as a person of interest. They're not even naming him a suspect. But his reason for not cooperating with the investigation is he believes what? That they are going to somehow hold him on something else and put him in jail forever or what?
Well, he said the way he described it on my show is that Belize was founded by pirates and sort of is still the same way. It's just very, very corrupt. Yeah, they came to him, local politicians came to him and asked him for a donation of $2 million for their campaign. And he was like, okay, what? Like, that's a lot of money. Like, apparently he has a lot of issues with the people that run things down there. They think he's worth billions and billions of dollars and that he could just give them money. So he hires all these thugs to sort of watch out for his house and keep, you know, keep everybody at bay and walk around with guns. And he's got 11 dogs running around.
Oh,
so no one knows. Yeah. No, he's so crazy that he was willing to talk to me. That's how
so
crazy this dude is.
You sound not crazy, by the way. That's how crazy he is.
There you go. It was so fascinating.
Do you believe him when he says he had nothing to do with his neighbor's death?
Oh, that's ridiculous. Why would I even speculate? I have no idea. I don't know him. I haven't met him in person.
Sound? How did he sound when you talked to him about it besides hopped up? Did he sound sincere and believable?
No, this is definitely a disconnect there. He seems like a guy who's trying very hard to plead his case, but he's also very savvy, so he's very aware that he's trying to get as many eyes and ears on him as possible so that it makes it more difficult for him to, A, disappear, and B, he believes, like all egomaniacs do, that he's going to be able to sweet talk and charm people into believing his side of the story. So you have to like factor in that as well. But, you know, he's not a bad guy.
Now, he's still in Guatemala.
As far as we know.
He's still in Guatemala, and Guatemala's talking about sending him back to Belize. Is that what's likely to happen next?
Supposedly, unless he can come up with some long paper, son.
That's right, man.
You got to grease some palms and make something happen. Should have stayed in America and got sued. Could have made some money back.
They are making a movie out of it. They've already started working on a movie.
Yeah,
I don't
just
know
sold the rights. He just
what the progress is. But it is hilarious, and this is something that it's such a modern age phenomenon. As this guy is, you know, he's got the police after
after him. He's on the run, yet he's calling up Wolf Blitzer on CNN. He's doing the Joe Rogan podcast. He's got the blogs where he's talking about where he is. It really is kind of hilarious when you think about it.
It's very hilarious. It's indicative of the crazy times that we live in. I mean, the guy was blogging while he was on the lam. He's got whoismcafee.com, an official McAfee on Twitter, and he's just constantly updating it with various releases of – apparently, he's been hiring people to spy on all these different politicians and representatives in Belize, and he has all this dirt on them. So he's releasing all this dirt online while this is going down. It's really fascinating.
Well, if you get a lot of great guests on your podcast, that is one definitely people ought to check out, the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. Joe's going to be on stage a week from Friday at the Wiltern for the End of the World concert. Tickets are on sale through LiveNation.com. A quick break. We'll come back after this on the world famous
106.7 K-Rock. It's the Kevin and Bean Show.
K-Rock. Ralph Garman joins us for the Showbiz Beat coming up in about 10 minutes or so in our final minutes with Joe Rogan. Hey, I wanted to mention real quick that Joe has a new hour-long special available on December the 18th, which is what? Coming up this week sometime, right?
Yeah, it's next week. What is that? 6 days from today?
Available. That's right. Yeah, today's the 12th. So available exclusively through JoeRogan.net. And you are the latest I guess this is increasingly popular with comedians because why not? Why go through the middleman? Why not pass the savings right onto your fans, right? Just $5
well,
to see the Joe Rogan special.
I don't want to have to talk to anybody and like get anybody's approval or any of that nonsense. And the Louis C.K. carved the path and did a brilliant move in releasing his special online directly to his fans. And I'm just stealing that idea, as is Jim Gaffigan and I think Aziz
Ansari.
A lot of people did it. It's a brilliant idea. And it just seems like that's the future anyway. As long as you can get it on your TV, everyone can get things from Netflix now and iTunes and Amazon. Yeah. It's so easy to do now.
Look, if you had gone the traditional old school route, this special would cost me $20. But the way you're doing it, it's costing me $5. It's like a win for everybody, and you're making more money off of it than you would have before too.
Yeah, you cut out this unnecessary animal, the distribution. And it's really hard for stand-ups to get specials distributed too. It's like, there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through. And then you also have to, I've had conversations before. Like I had a Comedy Central special that I did, and I had these conversations with these people where they're going over line by line all the different things that you're going to say and how you can't say this and can't say that and can you change this and change that. It's like, everything that's great needs to be ruined. So
exactly. Well, you can get all the information on that. You can check it out at JoeRogan.net if you want to buy the special. Again, available on the 18th. All right, real quick, final minutes, Joe. Let's talk some fighting for a minute. You were at the UFC on Fox this past weekend. I was very sad to see BJ Penn lose. I was not at all surprised by it. But I always liked that guy. And what went so horribly wrong for him? Just too old and too long away from the game?
No, not too old, not too long away from the game. There's a bunch of issues. One, first of all, BJ should not be fighting at 170 pounds. He doesn't weigh 170. He weighs in consistently under the weight limit. And his frame is just not the same frame as those guys that are fighting at that higher weight class. They're way bigger than him. Rory McDonald weighs 200 pounds before he starts his weight cut. And then he gets down to 170 and rehydrates. And probably come fight time, he's well over 180, 190 pounds. Okay, so there's a size factor too. And then there's the fact that these guys that he's fighting, guys like Rory, are absolutely 100% dedicated to fighting. That's all they're doing. They're constantly trying to improve. They live in the gym. And BJ's not there anymore. He gets fired up every, 6 months or so or whatever it is and decides he's going to fight again. So he gets back in training for a few months. And he trains really hard, but it is a long path to get in the kind of shape that you need to fight at a championship level. And BJ, I mean, he doesn't really have the kind of wind to keep up that for one round. At the end of the first round, he was already fading, and Rory was coming on strong. And part of it, again, is because Rory's larger than him. But fighting is not something you can dabble in. You can't have one foot in the fighting world. You have to be – if you're smart, you are either completely, totally obsessed with dominance in fighting, or you shouldn't be doing it. It's not a dabbling sort of a sport. It's a very dangerous sport.
Is he done now?
Who knows? Only BJ can tell you. And he's 34 years old. You know, he doesn't have to be done. Anderson Silva's 38. You know, if BJ wanted to and he wanted to reinvigorate himself, first of all, I think he has to move out of Hawaii for his camp. And not just for his camp. Like, he should be somewhere where he's training like that all year long. He's being pushed by young, hungry killers all year long. And unless BJ's doing that, he's never going to – first of all, he's never going to make 155. And second of all, he's never going to reach the sort of level that he was back in, like, the Diego Sanchez days or the Sean Sherk days when he defended his title successfully when he was a monster. He was just unstoppable.
He has to have people in his corner, though, who are smart like you and are telling him the same thing.
Nay.
Why has he – oh,
nay,
okay,
I do not believe that's the case. It's very hard to tell champions what they're doing wrong. It's very hard to tell all-time greats like BJ Penn what they're doing wrong. They don't want to listen, you know, and part of what makes them great is their ego, their ability and their belief in themselves, their ability to, like, look past all the doubters. And that's what makes them champions in the first place. So that same thing that makes you great can also bite you in the butt if you're not paying attention.
Saturday night, after you were done with UFC on Fox, did you then go home and watch the Pacquiao fight?
Yes, I did. We watched it. Me and Dana White watched it in his dressing room. It's pretty
cool. And is he done now?
I don't know. You know, Manny Pacquiao is such a nice guy. I met him. I did this thing with Daniel Tosh where I was for Tosh.0, I was playing his trainer and we were letting Manny punch him in the face for some strange reason. And Manny was very nice about it. Like, he barely hit him. But he's such a nice guy. It's so hard to watch him get stretched out like that. But
that was an unbelievable punch, though, that took him down, wasn't it?
I mean, that was dropping
like a sack of potatoes.
Well,
crazy.
He also ran into it. So it accentuates the power of the punch because he's moving forward. The hardest punches are the punches that you walk into. I mean, it's really hard to explain to someone who's never been hit before, but there's a big difference between a punch where you're moving away from it and a punch where you're moving forward. I mean, it's like doubles and triples the amount of power. And that was the perfect punch.
And he was winning. He was winning that fight. He was leading on all cards going into that sixth round, too.
But, you know, he had already been dropped. He'd been dropped for the first time in their series of fights. Mm-hmm. This is the first time that Marquez had actually dropped him. He had staggered him before but never dropped him. But then the next one was the boom. He just lowered it on him.
I will tell you, though, that all of us were thinking within a minute of seeing Manny out on the, you know, out on the canvas, we were thinking the Mayweather thing's not going to happen, or if it does, he's not going to get the money he hoped he was going to get after this, right?
Yeah, well,
that
everyone
has to be
said
a huge
that,
impact.
Yeah, Mayweather was slowly waiting for him to slow down. You know, Mayweather was waiting for him. Manny Pacquiao is such an exciting fighter, and his fights are so crazy. Like, he has these incredible wars, like the Marquez fight, and, you know, you look at the Margarito fight. Like, he has these, like, really exciting fights, but those cost money. you pay a toll for those on your body, and there's only so many of those you can have before you lose a step, and that's what everybody says Floyd was waiting for, because Floyd doesn't engage in those kind of fights. Floyd is one of the smartest boxers alive, and his style is so good defensively that he very rarely gets hit clean. Like, Sugar Shane Mosley was the last guy to really hit him clean, and he recovers really well because he's in incredible shape. He's very disciplined. Like, even though everybody looks at him and they think he's just bragger, he spends a lot of money, he's gambling, he's a loose cannon, he's very intelligent too. And he realized that Manny Pacquiao, look, there's physical limitations, and the speed of Manny Pacquiao when he was in his prime was just almost you almost couldn't get away from it. So he was going to get tagged by that guy. So he's like, not now. No, let's just make unreasonable demands and keep this bargaining going until that little dude gets cracked. And finally,
now maybe
he got
time.
Cracked.
Now maybe time to open the negotiations.
And
again,
you know, there's also the speculation of everyone's talking about performance enhancing drugs. And we had Victor Conte on the podcast, who was the guy that got arrested in that Balco scandal.
I remember
Barry Bonds and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's his take that everyone's on illegal drugs, that everyone's on performance-enhancing drugs. So he's suspect about Marquez, and he was suspect about Pacquiao, and so...
This is why I love when Joe Rogan comes in. There's never enough time to cover all the ground, Joe.
Well, I love coming in too, but I hate commercials, and I don't like the songs you play. I'm tired of this.
Joe Rogan
interrupt our conversation, even if it's good music.
Is the podcast December 18th. You can download the new comedy special for just $5 and get tickets for Joe and friends celebrating the end of the world at the Wiltern at the end of next week. Tickets available through LiveNation.com. Merry Christmas, man. We'll see you soon.
Bean, you want to come on my podcast someday?
Anytime.
Let's have a real conversation, man.
Love to.
A long-form one.
See you, Joe.
All right, you sexy bitch.
Michael Schneider from TV Guide joins us after the top of the hour. If you love television like we do, you definitely want to stick around for that. It's the world famous K-Rock, Kevin and Bean Show, 7:56, time for Showbiz Beat. Now here's Ralph.
Yeah, just as an aside, Schneider's one of the good guys, too, because he gets it, you know? There's a lot of blowhards in entertainment journalism who just like to, you know, bust people's balls and make fun of people and make mockery of the news. I hate those guys. But he's a guy who knows his stuff and really likes television.
So. I don't know if I speak Ralph or not. Does this mean he's excited about the new Joe Schmo? Is that what this translates to?
He hasn't seen it yet. We were just talking about it in the other room. I know Spike is starting to send out screeners to people in the media so they can take a look at the first couple episodes, I think. And he hasn't gotten his yet, but we were talking about it. We were talking about the fact that Schmo returns in January. And
very exciting.
He was wondering why it took so long for Spike to come back and do another Joe Schmo. And I said, it's only been 10 years. Why
well,
so soon?
You wanted it to be a surprise to the people involved in the show. You didn't want them to be having Joe Schmo in the back of their mind in any way, shape, or form, right?
Well, mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished,
people
indeed.
People barely remember that show, but we are coming back on January 8th.
And that's why I haven't written my sequel to Citizen Kane yet, is I'm just waiting for it to breathe a little bit before I get going with it.
Good idea. And while we're talking about me, one of my favorite subjects, yesterday, Ted came out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Ralph, you'll be happy to know, although I did not go see it in theater, I did buy Ted yesterday.
Woo-hoo!
So you should be looking for that 3 or 4 cents, whatever you get from every Blu-ray sold. I want you to know I did buy my copy yesterday.
You're getting that check. Ted was also on Jimmy Kimmel last night talking about the release of the Blu-ray
and
DVD.
The bear? Not
yeah,
Seth MacFarlane? Ted the bear was? Okay.
Ted is real. It's not Seth MacFarlane. It's Ted. And he went on Jimmy's show and they had a little conversation about the future of Ted.
Are there any plans to make Ted 2?
There are plans. Yes. We're basically just going to do the same movie, but in Thailand, like The Hangover.
Like The Hangover!
See, because...
So to celebrate the release of Ted, I am giving away a Ted prize package. It is a copy of Ted on Blu-ray, along with a limited edition 24-inch Ted talking plush teddy bear. And I've got him here in my hands as we speak. And the minute I walked into the room, Lisa was like, oh, can I touch it?
Yeah,
and I said, Lisa, you've touched it plenty of times. She goes, no, the bear, she said. So here's what Ted sounds like when you...
Hey, Johnny, how about a beer, huh? Couple of Bruce Dostoevskis? Come here, you bastard. You know what I like to do to her?
What?
Something I call a dirty Fozzie.
Yeah, the dirty Fozzie. That's what we like to do. So you will get the bear, and you will get the Ted on Blu-ray. The benefits of Ted on Blu-ray, of course... More Ralph Garman. They have some scenes that were cut out of the theatrical release. That you get to see a little bit more of on DVD. So if you'd like to check it out, call right now 1-800-520-1067. Caller number 12, since it's 12-12-12 today, caller number 12 will win the Ted prize package, and you'll get to enjoy Ted in the pleasure of your own home. How can you love it? It's crap.
It's not. It's great.
And did I mention more Ralph Garman? Did I bring that up at all?
You actually did, yeah. They should have put that on the box.
Now,
Ted, the more Ralph Garman.
Now with 33% more Ralph Garman. All right. I was talking about the SAG Awards that were the nominees that were announced this morning. And we did go through the theatrical motion picture categories, but I did want to talk about the primetime TV awards as well. Here are your nominations for Outstanding Performance by a Male Actor in a Drama Series. Listen to this batch. How do you pick between these guys? Steve Buscemi for Boardwalk Empire. Brian Cranston for Breaking Bad.
Wow.
Jeff Daniels for The Newsroom.
All right, stop right there.
John Hamm for Mad Men. Damian Lewis for Homeland.
What do I keep telling you? It's the golden age of television.
How do you pick between those five performers?
I don't know. But, of course, do they do like a specific episode the way the Emmys do?
I don't know how what the criteria is, Lisa.
Okay. Because I think that would make it simpler if you were looking at just one episode.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I think it's for overall performance. Because I vote. I mean, I'm in SAG, and they just send you the list, and they just have names in the series like this. They don't send you a screener or anything. No. So.
And let's face it. If you watch Breaking Bad, for instance, it's impossible to forget all of the other episodes and all the other things that you've seen Bryan Cranston do in the history of that show just because you're voting on one episode, too.
Yeah, I think the reason they do the one episode for the Emmys and stuff is for people who haven't seen the series. Mm-hmm. They're able to send them an episode that they feel is representative of the entire
And also
work.
They do special guest stars.
Right, for that stuff.
And that kind of thing.
Outstanding performance by a female actor in a drama series, Claire Danes for Homeland. Michelle Dockery for Downton Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Lange for American Horror Story. Juliana Margulies for The Good Wife. Maggie Smith for Downton Abbey.
It's a tough one, too.
Tough one.
Supporting actor in a comedy. I'm sorry. Performance by a male actor in a comedy. Alec Baldwin for 30 Rock. Ty Burrell for Modern Family. Louis C.K. for Louie. Jim Parsons for Big Bang Theory. Eric Stone Street for Modern Family. Again, five great actors. Outstanding actress in a comedy. Edie Falco for Nurse Jackie. Still have problems with that category.
Yeah, it's very odd.
Because
she's great.
She's great,
weird.
But that show is... it's. You put Nurse Jackie up against Parks and Recreation.
It's a drama.
It's a more powerful show, so then naturally the performance is going to be more powerful, you know? Amy Poehler is nominated for Parks and Recreation. Tina Fey for 30 Rock. Sofia Vergara for Modern Family. Betty White for Hot in Cleveland.
There it is.
Best performance by an ensemble in a drama. Boardwalk Empire, Breaking Bad, Downton Abbey, Homeland, and Mad Men. Best performance by an ensemble in a comedy. 30 Rock, Big Bang Theory, Glee, Modern Family, Nurse Jackie, and The Office. So there are your SAG Award nominees.
The Office?
Just
really?
This morning. I know. I think that's a farewell nod.
Yeah. Thanks for playing.
Yeah. Great, great work for a lot of years. Not the past couple, but thanks for being on our TVs. Today's celebrity birthdays. Dan Hawkins of The Darkness is 36 years old today. Mayim Bialik from Blossom, of course, and The Big Bang Theory is 37. Regina Hall from Law & Order. Los Angeles, Ally McBeal is 42. Jennifer Connelly celebrates her 42nd birthday today. Sheila E. is 55. And game show host and dog ball collector Bob Barker turns 89 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Hey, party people, keep listening to K-Rock all week long to score your tickets to see Muse at Staples Center. They have two sold-out dates already in January. They're adding a third one January 26th. Tickets go on sale Friday morning at 10. Go to K-Rock.com for all the details, and we'll have them for you before the end of the show. Lisa, is there anything we love more than television?
No, not really.
I have to tell you, and I know that people say you ought to get out of your house every once in a while and do stuff and interact with people and go out and see the world, but every minute I'm away from home, I'm not watching TV. It makes me sad, and that's why I'm delighted to welcome Michael Schneider to the program. He is the TV Guide Magazine LA Bureau Chief. Hey, Mr. Schneider, how are you, sir?
Hello. Happy to be celebrating 12-12-12 with you, Bean. I know how important that is to you. So.
Sure. Well, I do love the numbers. Yes. Hey, is it a dream gig being... well, is it fair to call you a television critic? Is that okay to say?
Reporter. I just covered the business, so...
Okay. Yeah. Is that a dream gig, and how does one end up being able to watch TV for a living?
it's kind of a dream gig. I mean, the fact that we can watch TV at our desks at work is pretty amazing. And one that I don't really tell many people about because, yeah, it's kind of cool.
It sounds like you're bragging when you just talk about how you spent your day. And then you go out and you interview all the people on your favorite shows and stuff. Now, you have to watch so much crap, too, though. Every time we read an article about the worst shows on TV, it's because some poor sap like you had to sit down and spend some time with the new Rob Schneider show, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. And that's definitely not on my best of 2012 list, I will tell you that.
Sure. What's the state of the television industry right now? We hear so much about the struggles that particularly the networks are having getting people to tune in at all. It's hard to get people to watch things live. Is the business model successful right now?
No, not at all. It's fallen apart. And part of it is this was the year of the DVR. It's now the DVR is in about 50% of homes. So it's really having a true impact on how we watch TV. And also it's sort of thrown things up in the air. No one knows what's a hit, what's not. Not a hit, when to cancel a show, when to keep it on the air. And so you're seeing some shows stay on longer than they should, and you're seeing some shows strangely being canceled earlier than you expected. So it's kind of up is down, down is up.
What is that? How does that impact when you hear about the death slots on Friday and Saturday nights? When Fringe moved to Friday, people were like, "Oh man, they're just waiting for it to die." But if so many people have DVRs now, why does it matter what the actual night is that a show is broadcast anymore?
Well, that's kind of true, and that's why the Fringe, for example, still managed to thrive on Friday nights because it had such a DVR viewership and also a young adult viewership. And some of it comes down to who's watching these shows. Are they well off? Are they young? And you know, who do advertisers want to connect with? And so it has a lot more to do than just who's actually watching the show live on a certain night. That's still the holy grail, though. You want people to watch live because then they're watching commercials. But fewer people are doing that now. So it's changing.
Is that why sporting events are still the one irreplaceable thing? Because so few people will tape a game and watch it back afterwards. I mean, that's the only way to get people to watch commercials for real,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and that's why those deals are so expensive now. I mean, these are billion-dollar deals for these sports rights, and that's why ultimately your cable bill continues to go up because they're not cheap, and eventually they pass along that price to the subscribers. So you're paying a little more than you used to, obviously, for cable.
All right, let me ask you this. This is the voice of Michael Schneider from TV Guide here on the Kevin and Bean Show today. Let me ask you this, because we talked about the networks briefly.
I have to think sometimes that it's more than just cable channels have a little more leeway with language and body parts than the networks do. I feel like they are not creating good shows at the networks in general. When you see, like, this time of year when the AFI Best Of list comes out for all the shows on television, one of them is on a network, is on a major Big Four network. The rest of them are all on cable. What's going on there? Why is the brain trust not developing great shows, must-see shows, for CBS and ABC?
Well, cable has the benefit of, you know, they do fewer episodes. They do maybe 13 a season. So that automatically, creatively invigorates you because you don't have to do those crappy midsection episodes. And so it automatically attracts more creators who want to do sort of their passion projects. And also you get better stars because maybe a movie star doesn't want to commit to 24 episodes a season, but they'll do 13. So they'll do, you know, say Glenn Close will do Damages on FX because she only wants to do 13 episodes. So it sort of begets that, and then more people are attracted to doing projects for AMC and FX and HBO and Showtime. And the broadcast networks are struggling to catch up because they've got more masters to feed. They've got to do more episodes.
Why don't they look at what's happening and see exactly the problems you're describing and not reset their clock and do fewer episodes?
Yeah, I mean, this is a massive industry, and it moves at a glacial pace. But they're trying to. Fox actually has a show coming out this midseason called The Following, starring Kevin Bacon. So they're only doing 15 episodes of this show, partially because Kevin Bacon would only do 15 episodes. But it's also a very dark show. Kevin Williamson's the producer, and it's very dark. It's about a serial killer, and it's going to be pretty violent. It's going to be the kind of show that cable actually has done, and I think in success, you're going to see broadcast networks do more stuff like that.
Have you seen any of The Following yet? Because the previews that I've seen make it look really compelling.
Yeah. I actually saw the second episode last night. And there are some moments where you think, wow, this is going to be on Fox. This is like an FX show. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see whether people show up. And you know, also on cable, you can do smaller audiences because it's cable. So maybe you can do a niche show that's going to attract maybe only 2 million people. And that's going to be awesome for cable. But broadcast, you still need to attract 10, 15 million people. And as a result, you got to go a little broader, and you lose a little edge, and suddenly you're doing the Rob Schneider show.
Oh God!
One more question before the break. And I think I saw this maybe on your Twitter feed, Mike. The biggest entertainment show, I guess, non-sports related show on television right now is The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's as big as it gets. I mean, it's 12, 14 million people. It's a monster. That's a show that I would imagine nobody predicted would be as pop. Even AMC, who greenlit the show, no way could you see that coming. This is an out of left field phenomenon, right?
Completely. And it's kind of throwing everyone off because, yeah, it's the number one show, especially among young adults this year. It's a show about zombies, and it's pretty ultra violent. But it's also a show about relationships. And I think once something gets in the zeitgeist and becomes a pop culture phenomenon, people, you know, sort of gravitate toward it. And you're seeing now that a show that attracts maybe 12 million is suddenly a huge hit, whereas, you know, 15 years ago, the huge hits were attracting more like 25 million, 30 right. million people. So the world's changed.
And The Walking Dead deserves every bit of acclaim it's gotten. I mean, I think it's brilliant. I think the actors are great. The stories are great. It's super compelling. It's super scary. I mean, I love that show, and clearly a lot of people do too. But could you go around to almost every other channel that you know of, Michael, and find out that they turned it down at some point?
You know, there's always those stories where you pitch it around, and yeah, it wasn't originally developed there, but you know, it's always sort of lightning in a bottle, and for some reason it ended up at AMC, and they managed to turn it into a mega hit. So
are the other channels going to now do a million other supernatural type shows, hoping to kind of, you know, go along in the wake of Walking Dead, do you think?
Well, you know, again, you're going to see more dark shows this midseason. Beyond The Following, you CW's got a show called Cult that's about sort of a show within a show about a serial killer. There's also a show actually NBC is doing a version of Hannibal the Cannibal is coming to broadcast TV as well. So again, broadcast TV is getting a little darker, I think partially in response to cable. And not just The Walking Dead, but also American Horror Story, Sons of Anarchy, these really gritty shows that are doing really well with young adults.
Michael Schneider is our guest. He's from TV Guide. We'll talk more TV because it's our favorite topic in the whole world when we return right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Adam Carolla joins us in a few minutes here on the Kevin and Bean Show with This Week in Rage like he does. It's the world-famous K-Rock here on a Wednesday morning. Michael Schneider, our guest in studio. He is the TV Guide magazine LA Bureau Chief. Hey, Mike, you still with us?
I'm still here.
You didn't quit and leave after the first segment?
This is where the magic happens.
I have a question for you, Mr. Big Time TV Guy. Why is the funniest show on television, 30 Rock, always rated about, I don't know, 115th in the weekly ratings? What's that problem? Well, that's a disconnect.
That's the big mystery of all these great NBC comedies. I mean, not just 30 Rock, but Parks and Rec, which is having another great season. And,
absolutely.
You know, Community, which finally comes back in February. And you know, these are great shows. But, you know, for one reason or another, I think part of it is just NBC's been in the dumps for so long that it sort of brings everything down. So, you know, people just aren't watching NBC at the moment, at least later in the week after The Voice goes off the air. But, it's an internal struggle they have at NBC. They're trying to figure out what's our comedy brand. Are we going to go broader? Are we going to go with, you know, studio audiences and multi-camera? Or are we going to stick with these sort of these single camera shows that are clever and smart, but maybe not broad enough for a big audience? It boggles the mind.
I don't understand it. I mean, and I know a lot of people who love 30 Rock, and maybe that's just I hang out with people who are too much like myself, but I don't know why everybody doesn't watch 30 Rock. There's no show on TV that has more jokes per minute than 30 Rock.
Yeah, and you know, at one point it was doing well, and it started winning a lot of Emmys, but, you know, I think also, you know, it's in its final season, and to some degree we've seen lately with shows in their final seasons that they don't bring back audiences because I guess maybe audiences have kind of moved on, and they know the show's ending, so they're just not going to bother to check in to see the ending, but it's too bad, because you're right. They're having a great season this year. It's one of their best in the last few years.
All right. Let me ask you about a couple of shows that are very popular, but are also, they seem to polarize the audiences. Honey Boo Boo would be a great example of one that I don't think anybody, I mean, everybody looked at it as like a cash grab off of this other reality show, The Toddlers and Tiaras. Who the hell is going to watch this show about this six-year-old? But it turned out that her whole family was so fascinating that people seemed to love that show, except for the ones that don't. What's your take?
Right. Well, you know, it's train wreck TV. It's like a lot of the stuff on TLC right now, but obviously it's getting ratings. I think, you know, to get philosophical, maybe it's, you know, these are still tough economic times, and you kind of want to maybe see someone who's actually a little worse off than you and feel a little better about yourself. And at the same time, they're endearing. They do love each other. It's not our world, but it's kind of fascinating to peek into this other world where, you know, it's just not a life you'd ever seen before on TV. So there you go.
You and I have talked about this before, about Honey Boo Boo specifically, which is I think a lot of people tuned into that show expecting to make fun of or laugh at these people, only maybe to realize, wow, they have a great family relationship, and they seem really, really happy. And wait, maybe they're happier than I am. What's wrong here? What's happening?
Yeah, maybe it's not a life for me, but I can see where it works for them, and you kind of can appreciate that they've got sort of their own little nuclear family going.
Right. Yeah. All right, let me ask you about another one, the HBO show that had so much backlash before the first episode even aired. People were lined up to hate Lena Dunham's show Girls. She's a 25-year-old, as we talked about on this show frequently, who has a $3.5 million book deal. And this show seems to be so polarizing. I know people like Lisa and me who adore it, who can't wait for it to come back next month, and other people who just think it's the worst thing that's ever been filmed.
Yeah, and I can see both. It took me a while to warm up to Girls, partially because that first episode, the first couple episodes, I kind of couldn't get into. I felt her character was a little too entitled, and you know, maybe there is a little generational gap. I'm Gen X, and I, you know, sometimes look at some millennials and say, just, you know, buck up. But it's such a clever show. She's such an amazing writer, and you know, once you sort of watch a bunch of episodes and you kind of get into the characters and you realize this is just a well-crafted show, it won me over, but it took me a while.
And I feel the kind of the same way about Girls that I do about Louie, in that it is such a specific point of view from one person's mind, and sometimes that does take a minute to kind of get in the groove with them, but it's also, that's what makes it so refreshing and so different from anything else on television, because nobody else could do either of those shows but those two people.
Yeah, and let's talk about Louie for a second. I mean, that was an amazing season. The last few seasons have been amazing, but it's become probably one of the best dramas on TV, even though technically it's a comedy.
Right.
Just the pathos on that show, and you know it's funny, at one second
to be a great actor too.
Fantastic.
Great actor.
And some of the choices he makes, in casting, you know, we were talking about David Lynch this season. Incredible on the show. And F. Murray Abraham.
So good.
And you know, he's even made, some people who we, you know, don't think of as being sympathetic characters like Jay Leno or Dane Cook actually kind of come off well. So.
Right. All right. Let me ask you about one more. And again, we could talk all day, Michael. I'm so sad that you, we are going to have to say goodbye after this segment because I love talking about this stuff. You mentioned F. Murray Abraham. He's been a guest this season on Homeland, which is another one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to notice that there are a lot of people who feel like Homeland is now impossible to believe. It's gone so far off the rails in how crazy it is and how unbelievable it is that it seems like there's already a little bit of a mini backlash now that Homeland is more popular than ever.
That always happens with TV. There's always the backlash, and then eventually there's the backlash to the backlash. So get ready in a next year's season when people say it's back, Homeland's back, baby. Saul and his beard are back. But yeah, I can see that. There have been some ridiculous moments on the show toward the end of the season. The Dana character, the young girl on the show, has become sort of a caricature of herself. But it's such an amazing thrill ride, and I'm still along for the ride. I'm a Homeland apologist. I'm still enjoying it and having a good time, and I cannot wait for the season finale next week.
I'm right there with you. Where can people read Michael Schneider and what he's writing about TV?
Well, you can go to tvguide.com/magazine, or you can go to my Twitter feed at Franklin Avenue, or go to franklinavenue.net. I'm everywhere, baby.
It's so great to have you on the Kevin and Bean Show, man. Thanks so much for stopping by. Happy holidays to you.
You too.
It's Kevin and Bean on K-Rock. 6.7.
Adam Carolla. On the phone, on the Kevin and Bean Show, like you do. How are you, Ace Man?
Doing great. Get it on, baby.
Get it on indeed. Hey, I didn't see you at Acoustic Christmas this weekend. I usually look forward to shaking hands and having a drink with you, but I didn't see you this time around. Did you not make it?
I was in breathtaking Fresno, California doing the show.
Well, I think you made the right choice. No one can deny you that. Fresno, Fres yes, is what I say. Adam Carolla has a bunch of stuff coming up locally, including tonight at the Irvine Improv with special guest Dana Gold. You're also going to be appearing at the Hollywood Improv on the weekend of December 14th. And, of course, the Adam Carolla New Year's Mangria show is on sale now for Saturday, December the 29th. All the information and tickets available through adamcarolla.com while they're by your Mangria as well. It's time for This Week in Rage.
It's time for This Week
in Rage.
I'll start with three and work and my way up to number one. Yeah, they just came out with this list. I don't know if you guys saw it. I think it was last week. They do every year. They have the list of most overpaid actors.
Okay.
Eddie Murphy's always at the top of the list. Nick Cage, Katherine Heigl. These are people who got paid way too much to do movies that made way too little.
Right.
And yeah. Eddie Murphy's always on this list. And every time everyone reads the list, it's always like, hey, let's have a big laugh. Look at Eddie Murphy. He got paid $25 million to do that stupid tree movie. What a joke. Who's the joke really on here? And the list should not be most overpaid actors. The list should be Hollywood's smartest agents.
Yes.
That should be the list. If I was Eddie Murphy's agent, I would just show up at every meeting over at William Morris or wherever I was and go, guess who made the list again? And everyone would be like, isn't that embarrassing? And you're like, hell no. It's like the Cadillac dealership that sold it Cadillac for 10 times the price the car was worth when you could have gone down the street and got a Denali for, half the price or Escalade or whatever the hell they are.
You actually bring up a good point because every actor who's not on that list, essentially, they're not being paid enough. They're undervaluing themselves because their movies are making way more money and they're not getting a cut of it.
That's right. Like Leonardo DiCaprio is laughing at Eddie Murphy for being at the top of that list every time. Meanwhile, he's being underpaid. If he were smart, if any of these guys were smart, they would just find Eddie Murphy's agent, drop their agent, and get the guy who gets people way too much money for what they do.
Good point.
So each year, you should hope that your client is on that list. And again, rename it L.A.'s Smartest Agents. Number two, this little piece of news that came about this week, or somebody tweeted me this. This is appalling. This is the saddest thing ever. I used to, and you moved smartly to Seattle years ago, but I used to say, when you see the barbed wire around the freeway signs, this is the beginning of the end, and then you get behind the street sweeper, and you say, no human trafficking, and there's a phone number underneath there, and then you see the one that says, end senior abuse, and then you go by the firehouse, and it says, if you want to drop your kid off, drop them off here. Don't put them in a dumpster. Drop them off here. You can, you know, slide down the pole and play with the Dalmatian, and every Friday's chilly night. These are all very sad signs that if you would have trouble explaining to one of our founding fathers. But the saddest one of all, the saddest L.A. statistic of all, half the accidents are hit and runs. Half being nationally, it's 10%. In Seattle, I mean, really, in Seattle, seagull craps on your car, it leaves a note. You should put that on the sign as they enter Seattle.
That's an astonishing statistic. That's just, hey, I can get away with it, or hey, I don't have insurance and I can't afford to go to jail. What's that about, Adam?
I'm drunk. I'm not here legally. I don't have a license. I got 5 DUIs. I got 3 guys in the trunk. I can't hang around for Johnny Law. I don't, whatever. It doesn't scream well insured and, you know, responsible citizen. One half of all the accidents, I'm not talking about with pedestrians, and I'm not talking about when your car is parked over at the Costco. I mean while someone else is in the car that you just ran into.
That's amazing.
I'm sure it would be higher if the cars weren't leaking radiator fluid and didn't have 2 popped front tires. Like, if they were drivable, it'd probably be well into the 80s. I'm saying, for a city, this is the NFL combines. This is the punt, pass, and kick competition. I don't need to look at standardized testing. I don't need to figure out what the median income is. You tell me that you live in a city where half the accidents are hit and run, and that means it's time to pick up and move to Texas.
I think you might be onto something there.
Number one, you know, I went to my kid. I went to my daughter's Christmas school pageant.
Have you learned her name yet, by the way, Adam? I always mean to ask you that.
She's the girl.
Okay,
the girl.
Just the girl.
She's
all
just
you
the
need
girl.
To know.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, the boy's called the boy. I don't want to confuse her.
I understood. All right.
I go to Natalia. I go to Natalia's Christmas pageant at her school. She's 6 years old. She's in the first grade. She's going to sing a song. All the kids get it. All the classes get a chance to sing one song. Then they file them out. Then the next class comes in. She gets up there, gets her class all loaded up, and sings the dreidel song. And that's when I realized, A, there's never been a good song written about a dreidel. B, nobody knows what a dreidel is and nobody cares. Less 6-year-olds know what a dreidel is than Los Angeles Clippers know what a Clipper is. That's low. By the way, I got a quick one I just discovered the other night. I said, no celebrity has ever driven a Chevy celebrity.
Right, yeah, you did.
Nobody has ever driven a Chevy Malibu who's actually lived in Malibu.
Oh,
that's my second powerful thought of the day. But here's what I realized. We need to move Hanukkah. It gets in the way. It's right in the middle of our Christmas. It's taking a dump right on Santa. It really is. I run into people all the time, especially living in Hollywood and L.A., where it's like I go, hey, Merry Christmas. I'm Jewish. So, oh, yeah, hey, sorry. Oh, Hanukkah. And then I got to hear the dreidel song. Can we move Hanukkah to March? What's it doing in the middle of our Christmas season?
I think there is a reason why it falls roughly
no
on the calendar
why
when it does.
Be moved. Anything can be done. And, well, like I said, this is better than my move the Jews to Baja, California. Let's do 2 things. Let's pick them all up from Israel. Let's move them over to Baja. Let's get the economy back on its feet. Let's not worry about the rockets being lobbed over from Palestine. And while we're moving, we'll be explaining Hanukkah March. Because we don't have much going on other than March Madness, and no one's going to confuse that with Hanukkah. There's not going to be a lot of guys out on the court with yarmulkes. And now it's this thing where, hey, have Merry Christmas. Oh, sorry, Hanukkah. Right, yeah. Are we in that yet? Plus, they move it around all the time anyway.
You know, it's confusing.
4 days into Hanukkah, I didn't even know it.
Yeah, it's definitely confusing.
It's
so once
movable.
Again,
let's move it to March. I don't want to hear the dreidel song at the kids' Christmas play.
All right. Adam, once again, has all the ideas. It's just a question of somebody letting him put it into action. Tonight, you'll see him on stage at the Irvine Improv with special guest Dana Gold. Tickets on sale for that, as well as this week at the Hollywood Improv, available at adamcarolla.com. Do what we do, by the way, and order your mangria through adamcarolla.com as well. It is perfect just in time for the holidays. Ace Man, it's probably the last time we'll have you on before Christmas and or Hanukkah. Thank you for everything this year. We'll see you soon, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
You're listening to the world-famous K-Rock at 106.7 KROQ, 8:57. Time for the Showbiz Beat yet again. Here's Ralph Garman.
Our buddy Michael from TV Guide. Mm-hmm. Great interview, by the way. He knows TV. He knows how to talk it.
Yeah, yeah. Very enjoyable. I could have talked to him all day.
On his way out, told me he was coming to see Hollywood Babylon this weekend.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, nice.
How about that? Big-time people are coming to see my show. Big-time people. Would you like to be a big-time person? You can come see me and Kevin Smith do Hollywood Babylon this Saturday night at the John Lovitz Comedy Club and Podcast Theater up at Universal City Walk. 8 p.m. Saturday night, we will be doing our patented brand of bitter, stoned, and drunken showbiz talk. We will talk badly about famous people, and we will do it while in various states of inebriation. So come out and check it out. You can go to thelovitz.com for more details and for tickets. It's getting to be the holiday season. That means all the best holiday music's on your TV and on your radio. Ah, oh, I love me a good Christmas song. That's why I don't care at all for the new Terry Bradshaw song.
Oh, he has a song?
Terry Bradshaw. Yeah, that Bradshaw. Former Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback, NFL TV commentator.
Now, I remember he, at one time in his career, after his career, maybe back in the 70s, he tried a country music career. He used to make country records. Is that still how he's singing?
That's his new song, Bean. It's a new country Christmas song.
Okay.
You're right, Bean. In 1976, he had number 17 on the Billboard Country Singles chart with I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry.
That's right.
The country classic. Now he's back. He's just dropped his new single this week called The Lights of Louisiana.
I can't wait.
Good.
I can't wait.
You're in a Christmas music aficionado, Bean. I don't know if you have this one on your jukebox or not, but you may want to add it. Here is Terry Bradshaw. Yeah, the bald guy. The bald guy from Sunday Mornings that talks about football. He's singing a country Christmas song called The Lights of Louisiana.
Louisiana dreaming of family Christmas cheer. Lights shining bright on the ones I wish were near.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
How old is Mr. Bradshaw now, do you reckon? He's got to be 70, right?
Got to be, I think.
Yeah.
Or close to it, at least.
Yeah, late 60s, early 70s.
His voice isn't terrible. The song sure is.
Oh, he is propped up significantly by all kinds of electronics in that studio. But that song is god-awful.
I decided that was a terrible song.
It is. You're right, Mitt Romney.
My defense that anyone can sing country music. They will let anyone into that club. God bless him.
Please don't make that a hit, country radio.
Please make it a hit. Oh, please make it the red solo cup of Christmas, won't you please, country fans? As we look at the end of the year, we're wrapping up. All the lists are coming out on the intranets. All the lists of biggest, best, most famous, sexiest, top. This is a Bean's kind of list.
I enjoy these lists, by
the
way.
Yeah, this list is right up your alley.
All right.
This is the top 10 list of most popular celebrity deaths.
Oh, I love celebrity deaths.
I know you love death. I know you love celebrities. This is the top 10 most Googled deaths of the year. This is what people needed to know more about when they heard this person died. I'll give you 10 to 1. Okay?
Okay.
From the least popular dead people to the most popular dead people. Robin Gibb of the legendary Bee Gees was 10th on the list. People Googled his death 10th.
Okay.
Yeah.
This hurts me because he was my buddy. Davy Jones only made 9th on the list of the monkeys.
Yeah.
Number 8, Mike Wallace.
Oh, wow. That was Wallace. This year. Wow. Okay.
60 Minutes, Mike Wallace. 8th on the list. Tony Scott, the director, was 7th. Michael Clark Duncan's death made 6th on the list.
So these are people who hear about somebody dying, heard a rumor or something like that.
I got to find what's going on.
They want the details, so they go right to Google to find out what happened.
Most
okay.
Googled, yeah. 5th most Googled death of the year, Andy Griffith.
Oh, I forgot about that. It was this year, too. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-mm. Good death, Opie. Now, he would be, I think, dismayed to find out that number 4, more people Googled this death than his death. Amanda Todd. I don't know who Amanda Todd
Amanda
is.
Amanda Todd?
Yes.
Who the hell is that?
I have no idea.
Who's Amanda Todd?
More people are interested in her than Andy Griffith, Robin Gibb, or Davy Jones.
Apparently, she committed suicide. She was a bullied teen. She made the news because she was somebody who had been bullied and then committed suicide.
Okay, well, that's sad.
That's very sad, yeah.
Etta James.
The legendary
R&B singer was third. Second, Neil Armstrong.
Oh, yeah, okay.
First man to walk on the moon. Second most Googled death. Any guesses the most Googled famous death of the year?
It's hard to remember.
It's hard to remember. Larry Hagman, of course, he died just a couple weeks ago.
That's not on this list, strangely enough.
That is a great guess.
Ravi Shankar probably didn't make the list, probably died right after the list came out.
Ravi just died yesterday, yeah. So
who else died this year, Lisa? Who else big and famous died this year?
Most popular celebrity death, most Googled.
I don't remember. Who?
I'll give you a hint. And I will
Whitney Houston.
Be dead.
Of course, Whitney Houston.
Whitney Houston, number one death of the year. So there you
congratulations, go. You're back at number one, Whitney. I didn't think I'd ever see that.
Number one with a bullet.
Oh.
Actually, number one with a bathtub.
With a bathtub. Yeah.
Today's celebrity birthdays, Bob Barker, game show host and dog mutilator. He is 89 years old.
He's not a dog mutilator. He encourages people to neuter and spay their dogs.
He snips off their testicles. It is grotesque and perverse, and I, for one, do not support it. Sheila E., 55 years old today. Jennifer Connelly turns 42. Mayim Bialik celebrates her 37th birthday. She from Blossom and the Big Bang Theory, of course. And guitarist Dan Hawkins of The Darkness turns 36. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz.
Body safe to shore.
You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. On the world-famous Carrot, got a great hour for you still to come. You got tickets for Muse to see them at Staples Center. We'll give you those in a few minutes. And we're going to talk to Jeff Probst, Lisa. You know, Survivor, more popular this season than it has been in a long time. Great Final Five.
Yes.
He actually is going to have all five of them on his daytime talk show today. So we'll find out what that's all about with the great Jeff Probst in minutes. First, though, what an unbelievable story this is. A lot of people don't believe in exorcism, but it's very real. Exorcism is as popular today, maybe more popular today than it ever has been. In fact, they are adding people at churches. Priests in Europe are now adding people to do exorcisms, to travel around to people's homes and pull the devil out of their relatives and their friends and their loved ones, because apparently that's a thing that happens. It's real.
It is real.
Exorcisms.
People get possessed all the time.
Not just for scary movies anymore. The BBC reports that they are adding trained priests all over Europe to try to keep up with the apparent increase in calls. In fact, it has gotten so bad now, and local churches are being so overwhelmed with people looking for help with exorcisms, and this is not a joke, my friends, that they have set up an exorcism hotline. There's actually a phone number that is available through churches in Europe that you can dial and get help with your exorcism problems. So this is when you have been possessed by Satan and you need a priest to come out and perform a ceremony to get him out of you. And I want to find out more about this. So we asked producer Dave to get us the number, and sure enough, we have it. So let's dial that up right now. An exorcism hotline.
Okay.
They actually have hours, by the way, and this works out well for us with the time difference. They're available for 2.5 hours every afternoon throughout Europe local time. So we should get them here.
Okay.
Hello, and thank you for calling the Milan Catholic Diocese Exorcist Automated Hotline. How you do?
We're doing fine.
Hey, I'm not talking to you. I'm a recording.
I thought it was a recording. Okay, good.
If you think you are possessed by El Diablo, press 1. If you think you know somebody else that is possessed by the devil, press 2.
Let's go 2. Let's try to line somebody up to help a friend.
Oh, boy. You think you know somebody who's possessed by the devil?
I do, yes.
Well, we got to ask you some questions to see if they are really possessed. When you interact with this person, do they talk about one of your parents having oral sex in hell with somebody?
Oh, God.
If they do, press 1 now.
I think that's...
Or when you talk to this person, do they talk about meaningless facts over and over again and post really stupid tweets? Press 2 now.
Okay, what's happened? What do you think, Lisa? Try 2? Should we try 2?
Let's try 2.
Let's try 2.
Oh, boy, you got a real problem. Let me ask you some more questions. Okay. Looking for these signs that this person has a devil living inside them. Does this person live on an island? Press one now.
Okay.
Does this person listen to the music of Satan's daughter, Taylor Swift? Press two now. Has this person recently had an organ removed? Press three now. Or all of the above, press four now.
Well, if we're headed where I think you're headed, yeah, that's all of the above. I don't. Well, how did this turn into being about me?
Oh my goodness! What's the matter for you? This person you are dealing with may not just be possessed. It may be the devil incarnate.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. In order to learn how to, one, get rid of the person's satanic influences, press one now. If you'd like to know how to go to this person's island and kill him without being caught, press two now.
I don't care for either of those choices, but I definitely don't want to be killed, so let's press one and see
all
what
right.
happens.
Okay, so you want to get the devil out of this person.
Yeah.
Sure.
Here's what you do. First, you never get rid of the devil.
What's happening?
The devil is inside him and will be there forever.
Oh, my God.
Your mother so smocks that smell.
Okay, careful with the language here. I don't like the way this ended up. This is... Oh, no.
Wait a minute.
Come on.
I was just growing up.
How is this happening? Okay. Satan.
That's horrible.
What's happening?
Oh,
what's
my
happening?
God.
A lot of pea soup right now.
Hey. It's been a busy day. We haven't had as much time to cover showbiz as we'd like, Ralph.
Yes.
So I think I'm glad that you are here for one final wrap up of what's going on in the World O Entertainment here on the Kevin and Bean Show. What you got?
Let alone. She is supposed to face a judge today to address whether her lying to police, allegedly, is enough to revoke her probation. She'll be appearing in front of the judge to see whether she could do as much as 245 days in prison.
Whoa.
Just for violating her probation. That does not include any jail time she would incur for actually lying to police officers if she's indeed convicted of that charge as well.
Wow,
regarding her.
That's serious time.
Her car accident in June. So, as you can imagine, Lindsay is putting on her most reasonable outfit. She is going to look presentable and cleaned up and have a lot going for her. She will show up there in front of the judge and she will plead her case, making a personal appearance in front of the judge today in the courtroom.
Seems like a good idea.
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. No, she's on tour with The Wanted. So she's sending her lawyer to show up in her stead while she jets off to London with the band for their shows there and then on to Dubai with her boyfriend, Max George, and the rest of the band that is passing her around like a bong.
Wouldn't you do everything you could to get to gain favor with the court, with the man or woman who could literally, with a bang of a gavel, send you back to prison?
Yeah.
Lindsay's worried
about the wrong bang.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of being worried about the bang of the gavel, she's worried about being the bang of the band.
I would be in there with my sad face on, wearing the best possible suit I could find, looking clean and sober and begging to give me another chance. I promise it'll never happen again. That's what I would do.
I would be running a Toys for Tots drive in front of the courtroom. I would be putting shoes on the homeless on the way from the parking lot. I would, you name it. I would be doing everything I could to make an impression on the judge. But look, in Lindsay's defense, she does have to bang a band in London and Dubai.
Airtight.
Exactly. While we're talking about slots, Pamela Anderson has a new boyfriend. Yeah. Chris Angel. There's
really?
A couple.
No.
Pamela
no.
Anderson and
no.
Vegas charlatan Chris Angel. They were seen for the first time out and about at the Marquez Pacquiao fight last Saturday. And
that's a terrible choice.
People who witnessed the two of them said they had a great time sucking down bottles of champagne and face while they were hanging out together. So here's America's favorite new couple.
I feel bad for Pam. I don't think she's aging particularly well, and she doesn't seem to have come up with a second act yet.
Look, when you are known as simply being a sex symbol, age is not your friend.
You need to save your money.
Yeah,
save your money. Exactly. Right, exactly. And back away from the sex symbol stuff gracefully, too, instead of keep going too long.
Yeah.
Well, look, that's all she's got. What do you want her to do, for God's sakes? This breaks my heart. Dave Hester.
Yep.
from Storage Wars,
yeah,
is suing, filing a major lawsuit against the producers of that program, alleging that the program is staged.
No.
Yes. A reality show that is not 100% reality.
What happened now?
Court documents say that the cast members have confronted executives over the show being rigged. And
but how many episodes have they had? I mean, they've had like
100?
Yeah, a couple seasons worth.
So a little late, right?
They've well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. It would be a lot more compelling argument, I think, if Dave Hester hadn't been fired from the show.
Right.
Right.
For
right.
being a douchebag and not for settling up with the terms that they were giving everyone else on the show. He refused to sign the contract, so A&E finally said, "Oh, if you're not going to sign the contract, we're not going to keep you on the show anymore. We just can't do that. So we're going to cut you loose, and we're going to bring in some other bidding douchebag, and you're going to be on the left by the wayside." And he always believed that show couldn't go on without him, and he was the star of the show, and when he started to demand ridiculous things, they cut him loose. Now suddenly he is suing.
Yeah. Now it's like sour grapes.
Yeah. He claims that the producers sought the units. So in other words, there are these storage facilities, and they put in the valuable or interesting items, bury them in the back, and then these people bid on the items, and they find this stuff, and they go get it appraised, and that's what the show is basically. Yeah. To which I say, yeah, and so?
Right?
How does that affect my enjoyment of the show at all?
It doesn't, Dave. Nope. It doesn't.
Yep.
Nope.
Yep.
So we'll wait and see what happens. He wants millions of dollars in compensation.
Why does he want to be compensated?
Because the show is not fake, and he's shocked, Lisa, shocked to find out that it's not real. He also claims that the producers gave some of the uglier cast members money to have plastic surgery done in order to be more attractive. Well, why didn't you get in line for some of that cash, Dave? Could use a little of that little freeze the fat program, whatever that is. Some of that cryogenic fat removal. Yeah. Here's the thing. I had always heard that they do that. That the producers put the secret stuff in there. But the people bidding on it don't know what's in there. So in essence, that part is real. They're actually bidding against each other. If they find something in there of interest to the audience, where's the harm? Where's the foul? And I think they get to keep the stuff, too.
Yeah.
They get the money, so.
Yeah, it doesn't rock my world if not every item was on there the day before. It really doesn't.
Yeah. I don't seem to mind. All right, before I get any further in the showbiz news, how about we give away some tickets to something cool? This movie looks awesome. Can't wait to see it. This is Friday. It is in theaters Friday everywhere, December the 31st. The movie, however, is called This Is 40.
Yay!
December 21st, just to be clear.
What did I say?
31st.
That's craziness.
21st.
21st, of course. This Is 40, new movie by our good buddy Judd Apatow. Stars Paul Rudd, his lovely wife Leslie Mann, and Jason Segel. It is sort of a sequel to Knocked Up, but not quite. It's a look at the lives of Debbie and Pete, who you met in Knocked Up a few years after the events in that film. This Is 40 will be seen at the K-Rock Advance Screening on Monday, December the 17th. If you'd like to go, and why wouldn't you? Call right now, 1-800-520-1067. You get to see the very funny movie This Is 40 before everybody else. Five winners will get through if you call that number. First five callers at 1-800-520-1067.
Yeah, Megan, hi, this is David Hasselhoff.
Hey, Dave.
Listen, I wanted to figure out how to get tickets if I get down there.
No, you don't get down here. You just call. First five callers, Dave. It's weird.
Megan Fox in a bikini, too, by the way, in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not bury the lead.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong there. By the way, she says she may stop taking roles that involve sex or sexuality. She's not going to play off on that part of her persona anymore. It's going to be strict acting for me.
Because now she's got a stupid kid, right?
Yeah, because she has a child now. She's going to be a straight-up dramatic actress.
No.
She studied for years,
right? I can't wait to see her on Broadway. I'm looking forward to her Broadway debut.
It's getting more like communism, saying we're going to do this and do that.
Maybe the bell jar or something like that. Equal dramatic weight. While we're talking about stage shows... Last night, it happened. The magic was finally released. The Spice Girls musical! Woo! Spice Girls musical debuted in London last night. Viva Forever is the name of the musical. It follows a teenager named Viva, who gets together with her female friends to form a singing group. All right, you lost me when her name was Viva.
And all the girls were there for the grand...
Not only were they there, Bean, but after the show, they took the stage and performed many of their biggest hits.
Wow.
No kidding.
Oh, to be there. Oh, to be there on that glorious evening.
You never lost interest in the Spice Girls. Oh. You continued to love them. It's not like you liked them and then forgot about them. Yep. And then went away from them and then came back to them. You were hardcore all along, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I love some Spice Girls.
How's the music? Don't tell me what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna really, really, really wanna take a sick. Ah, yeah. That one holds up. I'll tell you that. I still enjoy that one.
Sure does. The British press apparently did not like the musical. The Independent newspaper out of the UK gave it just 2 out of 5 stars. I can't imagine that's going to hurt the box office at all, because people like me who love the Spice Girls will go anyway.
Sure.
So don't tell me what I want, what I really, really want.
Okay.
Critics, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. See what I did there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were talking last hour about celebrity funerals, celebrity deaths, the top 10 most Googled celebrity deaths of the year. That list came out from Google. Whitney Houston was number one. We mentioned, hey, what about Larry Hagman? Well, I think he may have died too late to make the list this year. However, the producer...
Leonardo DiCaprio.
He is not dead, Kevin. He's fine. The producers of the TV show Dallas, the reboot of the legendary TV late-night soap that made J.R. Ewing and Larry Hagman a big, big star, they are giving him a special send-off on the March 11th. 8th episode of Dallas in the new season. They are apparently going to stage a funeral for J.R. Ewing. And the cool part is they have asked several cast members from the original show to return to be part of the funeral. So you'll see the cast of the old show showing up for J.R.'s funeral as they also mourn the loss of Larry Hagman.
That's a pretty good answer. Yeah. A pretty reason, right?
That's what I think. I think it's a pretty reason. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Bob Barker. Longtime game show host of The Price is Right before Drew Carey came along and took his job right out from under him. That bastard.
At gunpoint, if I recall correctly, wasn't it?
That's absolutely correct.
Pushed him out into an alley, into a trash can.
That's right.
What?
It's terrible.
Then neutered him.
That's
said, how do you like it? How do you like it, Bob?
That's what happened. That's exactly what happened. Is Drew Carey stole Bob Barker's testicles with his teeth.
That's right.
Ripped him right off of his body before he threw him in the dumpster.
That's right. Well, he had to prove he was the alpha dog. He had to prove his dominance.
It was a hostile takeover, Lisa. I can't believe you don't remember how ugly that was.
I didn't. No, I'm shocked.
Poor Bob Barker's 89 years old today. Sheila E., singer, percussionist, sex symbol. She's 55. Didn't she find Jesus or something, now? Or is that Apollonia?
I think that's Apollonia. Yeah. Sheila E., by the way, is still, an unbelievably accomplished percussionist.
Yeah.
And she still tours the world with some of the biggest acts. And she's still out there as a very popular working musician, even though she's not, doesn't have much of a solo career anymore. She's still doing real well.
55 years old. Jennifer Connelly's 42. Mayim Bialik of Big Bang Theory, formerly known, of course, as TV's Blossom. She's 37 years old today. She's going through a bitter divorce, apparently, right now with her husband. Yeah, they're splitting up. Dan Hawkins, guitarist for The Darkness, turns 36. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you so much, Ralph, and I am looking forward already to tomorrow's all-new Kevin and Bean Show. Will you bring us Trapped in the Closet, episode number 30 tomorrow?
As I look at the schedule, I think there's 33 episodes.
We're not going to make it all then. We're not going to get them all in before the holidays.
But I'm thinking we might have to double up tomorrow and Friday in order to get them all in. So maybe we'll do 2 tomorrow. How about we turn 2? Let's play 2.
How about that?
Let's play 2.
Do it.
All right. Maybe we'll try to work that in. Also, how about this? Bob Saget returns on the program tomorrow.
One second.
Vince Neil joins us tomorrow. Have you been following, Ralph, what's been going on with Vince Neil?
No.
He got into a fist fight with a fan in the audience the other night in the pit.
That. Well, I heard he threw a punch.
Karak microphones were there.
I heard he was swinging in the breeze, though, like a broken shutter.
He wants to come on and defend himself, and we said, yeah, hell yeah, we'll be part of that conversation. So the great Vince Neil joins us on the program tomorrow. Also, Dr. Drew is going to be stopping by. We continue our look back on the Kevin and Bean Show for 2012. Tomorrow we're going to count down for you the top 10 Omar intros of the year. Those little songs that he makes to introduce contested bits. So we're going to hear that. Should be very, very fun. We got all that tomorrow. We'll be talking about the world's worst Christmas parties on the program tomorrow, why Beer Mug is an idiot, and so much more. We have time for that tomorrow?
Is that every day we talk about that?
We have to stay until
segment?
Stay until noon tomorrow if we're going to fit all that into the
How
program.
How dare you?
All happening right here on the world famous correct.